All right, let's get our call to order here for the July 8, 2014 special meeting. We'll now come to order. Roll call, please.
Wilkinson. Mr. Eisner.
Here.
Mr. Bochensky.
Here.
Mrs. Nelson.
Here.
Mr. Ellis. Mr. Escalante.
Here.
Mr. Kenwood.
Here. If we could now all rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. Public participation. Is there anyone present who would like to address the board at this time?
Jeff Cooper.
Mr. Cooper.
Yeah, three things I'd like to try to get in tonight. The first is on the assistant principal's cost for that one position that we've been talking about. Some of you thought I was put to bed at the last meeting, but after I went on the website and listened to the June 10th meeting from last year, I beg to differ. I listened to the whole discussion on going ahead and amending Dr. Reebok's recommendation for how she wanted to get positioned. And what I came up with was some verbiage that is exactly in the amended motion that they asked for in three, that it was targeted, that they were targeting a reduction in next year's budget. And that was going to be for $89,000, which Mr. Kenwood had actually asked the question, was a position that was supposed to be $80,000 or $89,000, and he had said he wanted it to cover the $89,000, and that the amendment was supposed to, or the what was passed was supposed to include the subtraction of $89,000 from the 2013-14 budget to make a zero-sum game. It said nothing there about taking monies out of a pocket from one that was going to cover something that already had been, you know, put in and passed in the budget. This was supposed to be money taken out of the budget. It didn't happen. This year it didn't happen. And I made my feelings last month about how, you know, if we're able to find each year $100,000 or more to go ahead and take care of this, then we need to have a share of the money when we go ahead and we set a budget out. Obviously, that's not what the what the purpose is of some of the people who will work on the budget from the administration side. I beg to differ with that thought process. But so June 10th, 2013, we need to go back and listen to what was said and realize that we've not done what was passed at a board meeting and go ahead and adhere to what was said and fix that, if not for this year, fix it for next year and do the taxpayers right. The second point is on Colorado. I thought we had two trips to Colorado, and that was too many for my taste. Now I found out we had a third trip. We had three employees of Adams K-12 came here to spread the gospel, as I call it, at a cost of over around $2,000. That's over 20 people coming and going, trying to reinvent the wheel at a cost to the taxpayers of maybe around $13,000. So my question is, are we done with the Colorado trips at this point, or are there more that are going to pop up that taxpayers are only going to find out about if we go ahead and we spend time sifting through all the stuff that the district spends? I hope we're done. I think that's, you know, I understand everybody's got a great idea about how they want things to be, but I'm tired of it coming from my pocket. I think we need to just take it easy on the taxpayers. My third point is on the new PR person. I've been a business owner for 30-something years. Okay, I don't know how many in the admin and on the board are actual business owners. Okay, you know, I understand that we've got some very, very smart people on the board. In the admin, I would assume that we've got mostly people that have worked in the public world and not spent their own money when they're going ahead and making decisions. I was made aware about a month or so ago that supposedly the amount of monies that were being appropriated for the new PR person were not above about three-quarters of what the old ones pay once. So that would come in probably somewhere around $80,000 or so. Her salary ended up being about $500 less than what Julie Worthen's last salary was. As a business owner, I can't wrap my head around that. When I hire someone new that doesn't have the obviously, first, they start out without any experience at the job they're going to be doing. They've got to prove themselves in the job that they're going to be doing. So they've got to have experience in other things. But how can we take somebody who's brand new out of taxpayers' funds, the same amount virtually that the last person got and put it in there for 12, 14 years? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Okay. Thank you. Is that it?
That's all.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else?
Angel Olson.
Good evening.
Good evening. I'm Joel Clay, parent of Sid Jacob Boris Glenn. And I just want to remind everyone, and we're here tonight, one of the things to talk about is the internet policy. And we're talking about that because thankfully there were a few kids that came forward and talked to their parents about inappropriate things that they've experienced at school. And as thus, you know, we've now seen some of the things that have resulted. And lest we forget that there were a good number of people that were involved in all of this, and many families have been affected. And I've been reminded over and over by quite a few of those that they're glad that I get up and speak, because it's not something that they feel comfortable doing, however, that they've been quite affected. I spent some time talking to District 93, and I will send you this information, but District 93, Bill Shields and Maria Hoffman, they have done some amazing things. They have implemented, they've been using NetTracker for quite a while, and they are now using iCurio, which is a step up, but it's the site curation of 360,000 sites that are educator curated, and they get very positive things to say about it. They are actually implementing securely this summer. They've done a lot of research, found that to be the best filter, especially for take-home devices. They require mandatory parent training, regular ongoing training for kids and teachers. They're also looking at implementing Land School. Land School, I had never heard of it, and it's a desktop, a teacher's desktop management tool, much better than using a dashboard, because it actually gives you the dashboard feature, but the teachers can control the access and actually comment with kids. So if they're working with another student and they see something, they can restrict access or change access to a child's computer. And these are all things I think that we should take note of and talk with them. They are very open and willing to work with any other schools because they realize that this is all new territory for many of us. And as for the policy draft, I think it's extremely important that you realize with the policy that's put forward that we really should be setting the tone of no outside electronic devices. I was very disappointed when I read the policy draft as it currently is. If we had a policy that did not allow any outside devices, and then we allowed exceptions, so if a parent says, my child needs a phone, okay, we get that. You fill out this exception form, it's on file that your child carries a cell phone, and that when your child in the elementary, at a minimum, the child comes in and they check their phone with their teacher. If their classroom teacher is maybe going to have three phones or four phones, they check and put into the iPhone case. And they lock up during the day where it's safe, and then they give them those phones back at the end of the day. It allows people to have the peace of mind that those are securely managed. There, you know, were some other things that didn't really talk about whether training would be mandatory for parents, or whether in the or whether things would really change in the junior high. I know in there it said that they had to be out of sight, but that could be in their pocket. I talked to a few of the junior high kids, and they said last year about 75% of the kids in junior high had cell phones, and for those that didn't have cell phones, they brought in their iPod touches. So almost every child had a device of sorts that they carried around and they used in class, and they were given time from their teachers after they were done with their assignments to just do whatever they wanted on their devices. So it was kind of a free-for-all last year, and I really think that that's a huge mistake.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? Okay. Thank you. Anybody else? No? Okay, great. Thank you, folks. We'll move on to action items. First action item is the school district payment order, June 17th through July 8th, 2014. May I have a motion to approve the school district payment order as presented?
Motion.
Motion? Second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion?
I just want to confirm, when we get this at this time every year, there are some pieces that are redacted. And Bob, that's in particular because of names associated with children that might be in case or other programs like that, right? Okay.
Anybody else? Anyone from the Finance Committee want to comment or no need to?
Bob, I have a question for you, and this is specific because I didn't actually look at this before, so I apologize. Green demolition, what did we pay them for? Is that some with the
construction,
but we're paying it outside the CM's
work? They've approved all of that.
Okay. What school is that for?
It goes to the construction manager, then to the architects, then on to me for processing.
Okay, so all these bills, we will see all these bills on this truck registry as we go.
You're a direct contractor with the trades.
Gotcha.
You're not paying us, and we're paying them. You're paying them directly under our approval, FGM approval.
Okay.
CM agency.
Are you using a formal draw process to do that, or are you doing invoice by invoice?
It's a formal draw process.
Okay.
Monthly, it's just like what you would be familiar with on a monthly basis.
I got you. I was surprised. There must be a lot more on here I'm not picking off, but we had a small draw this month.
But it was a relatively small draw.
Okay. And I would expect them to be a lot bigger coming up. Gotcha. Thanks.
Anyone else? Okay. Roll call.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Bochensky?
Yes.
Mrs. Wilkinson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Fenley?
Yes. Okay, presentations, reports, initiative, and updates. The Bob for the tentative budget presentation 2014 and 15.
Personnel report.
Like I said, personnel report. May I have a motion to approve the July 8th, 2014 personnel report as presented, which includes the employment recommendations and resignations.
Motion. Second.
Motion. Second. Discussion? May I have a roll call, please?
Mr. Pochensky?
Yes.
Mr. Allen?
Yes.
Mrs.
Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Yes. Welcome.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. All right, folks, jumping ahead here. Presentations, reports, initiatives, and updates. The 2014-2015 tentative budget presentation.
So tonight we'll run through the, give you an overview of the budget that's on public display currently. One of the aspects of the budget is to really connect with the vision, the mission, the values that the district holds and seeing those come to life within the budgeted dollars. The next piece is a budget overview. As we worked with the Finance Committee, we really felt like it was important to highlight some of the key areas that we're focused on within the teaching learning, the hiring and retaining our staff, and ensuring that we know outside of this year and next year that roughly 70% of the district budget goes to salary and benefits for all employees. So that's a large portion of this budget. And a piece that we've been focused on the last few years is the technology and ensuring that those pieces are incorporated within our budget. We have a number of highlights that we've incorporated within this overview. Mike, if you could click on to the next page. We're really talking about that the stewardship, ensuring that we are looking after our dollars and that they are prioritized, and that we're putting them towards the goals, the mission, the vision of our district, and ensuring that we continue to move forward, that we continue to have an outstanding product for each and every one of our students. But we proud of the fiscal stewardship in many areas, as highlighted on this sheet. Mike? This is an important document, I believe, for the board. It really is the fiscal philosophy that was adopted a few years back, and ensuring that we're really looking at that we're bringing to you a district budget that follows these guidelines, that will provide a high-quality educational program aligned to our long-range goals, that we... that our facilities are safe and secure, and they're maintained at the highest level possible, that we see that we're hitting our class size targets that the board and state have set for us, ensuring that fund balance is met. But these are pieces that we believe we continuously meet and exceed, and try to ensure that we're following what the board has set for us to meet as our fiscal obligations. Within that, Bob's going to talk to you a little bit about, you know, the legalities behind it, where he has to put the account codes, and then he's going to go through a broad overview of the overall district budget, each department, and then within schools. But really, as we're going through it, please ask questions, comments, concerns, as we roll through it. Bob?
Okay. So we're here to present you this evening with the tentative budget for 2014 and 15. I first of all wanted to talk a little bit about revenues. As you can see, 86% of our revenue is locally generated from local property taxes. 7% is other local revenue, which is student fees, food service, generally things like that. State funding is general state aid, and the categorical funding and federal funding we receive, it's really less than 1% of our overall budget. And our expenditures, what do they look like? We actually have two slides associated with expenditures, because this year the numbers are a little distorted because of our large expenditures on equipment capital projects. But this year we're spending about 59% versus that 70% for salaries and benefits, and then we've got our capital equipment purchase services and other items as defined in the budget. And then I wanted to just show this slide. That's about 69% typically used for salaries and benefits within our budget. Again, distorted a little bit this year because of the significant expenditures for capital projects.
So, about one of the things we'll have to be careful of is, as we put out this information, is make that clear. Because when we're done with the capital, it's going to look like we've increased salaries. Because it's going to go from 59, you know, or I guess we're at 59, then it's going to go up to be 70%, and we're going to have to make sure that we explain that so people don't think that that's because we inflated all the salaries.
So, what does the overall budget look like? We have what I've done now is I have columns here set up for the 13-14 final budget versus the tentative 14-15 budget. I want to highlight that this is not the amended budget numbers that are in there. Paul and I talked about that. We thought that we would just leave this as originally presented. So we're talking about overall revenues of approximately $51,549,000 for the 14-15 budget, and approximately $58,620,000 worth of expenditures. Property taxes are due to increase approximately 2.28%. The other local revenues are also projected to go up, and that's by about 17%. And those are more for the lease schedules that just came on, because that's where I account for that through the debt service fund. So that'll be interfund transfers. State and federal funding I hate held essentially the same as the previous year, for an increase of about $1.5 million. salaries and benefits, as we've spoken of earlier, we've used the Skyward system. HR has created their employee management plan, and has pushed through what we believe to be very true and accurate numbers for the salaries and benefits line. So you're seeing really, when you talk about those kind of dollars, you're talking about standing still, at least in my estimation, with just slight increases. Purchase services are due to go up more, mostly for incurred expenses as related to the capital projects. And then also I needed to put more money in there for I might have lost a person. There's additional money in there. Most of it is related to purchase services for the construction project.
So for just a second, take us through the salary line. It's actually coming down slightly next year.
Very, very slightly.
So it comes down even though we have a contract that mandates increases.
Yes, but we're using a much more formalized process in terms of how we're using Skyward than we've ever done. Lori and her team has gone in, and through this employee management portal, they're able to track employees through the system. We account for retirements. We account for replacements. We account for all of those different types of happenings that can occur within a budget year.
Okay.
We're using each individual and their actual salary, and that's the big difference. Many districts use an average to come up with it. We put in, Lori and Bob and their team put in every individual, every salary for the 2014-15 school year to be as spot on as possible.
So, I mean, is it fair to say it's not apples to apples? I mean, it could actually be higher. We says down 11,000, but it might be up 10,000 because you're comparing an average versus actuals. I mean, is that, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of a plus or minus percentage. And I mean, I understand for purposes it's down, but
for the 14-15, what we're saying is those are the salaried employees that we know of as of today, whomever we've hired. Those are their actual salaries.
13-14 is a little different.
It is. It was more based off of an average of each teacher. It's just a different process we used.
Okay. One of the things for me, I thought, and maybe I misread this, but I thought on salaries that I thought part of the way that we were funding the hit to operations with the loan was in some savings and salaries that we were projecting over the next few years. So
no, out of Bob's?
I need to account for that through normal operating funds annually, and that's about $600,000 a year in funds that will be budgeted specifically for those payments that will come out of our operating funds.
Correct.
I don't believe we ever made the same statement that we would target salaries or benefits to account for those expenditures.
Okay. All right. I must have misread that thing.
And then we did talk about every building and every department in this building here, particularly Karen's budget, took some rather significant hits when it comes to supplies and materials. There was a reduction of about $276,000. As you can see, a significant increase in capital expenditures and in other dues and fees. This is for, I increased the line for special education payments. Our tuitions have been much greater this year, actually the past couple of years than what we typically budgeted for. So I wanted to account for that in this budget.
Can I ask you a question about that? Because on the cover note to the board, you talked about the increase in special education. For the, like you said, the tuition was $551,000. How do we manage for that moving forward? So as we have, you know, registration process worked really well this year in terms of people registering very early. So it gave us a much better staffing, you know, approach in terms of teachers and kids, et cetera. But, you know, I know that our special education services have been increasing over the last several years. So how do you forecast that?
It's a difficult number to forecast, and typically we have situations that we just need to account for them as they come to us throughout the school year. Mm-hmm. And in particular, what I did notice that, you know, Paul and I were talking within the past month or two that our payments to CASE over the past 5 years have doubled. So that's just some of the numbers that we've been dealing with, as well as special education payments to the surrounding districts. Now, I don't have that highlighted in this budget. It will come forward when I make an update to folks in August. But just to give you an example, I sent out bills for $426,000 to our surrounding districts at the end of June that we are now just starting to receive. That's a significant increase over what we've typically budgeted for and what we've typically received, which was around $255,000.
So you're saying $420,000 that we have billed
services? That's correct. And one of the big reasons is we took on additional program. I believe we now have two GIPs and an AIP program. So one of them is new, and so that's a reason for the increase. So that is something I did want to highlight. You'll see an increase in other local revenue over what you're seeing now, but that will be as a result of additional billing for special ed services.
And Erica, another way that we're hoping to understand and be able to project cost in the future a little bit better, and Bob is working with other case districts to create a more consistent billing approach to each program, as opposed to kids go to this district, we're charging for this, and at another district for the similar services, we're charging something different. They're really working together across all the co-ops to say, okay, if it's a GIP program, it is going to be charged this amount, no matter if it's in 89, 41, wherever it may be.
We're going to work and develop a daily rate for all the programs that will be applied throughout the cooperative itself. Because I've seen some districts that charge $189 a day for a program, and other districts are charging $139. So, and it's really just a matter of the teachers that are dedicated to that program, their salaries and their benefits. So if you have a more senior staff dedicated for a particular program, obviously your costs are going to be different. But we promised to work together this summer and develop a more uniform approach.
Mm-hmm. Does that have anything to do with the needs of the child in terms of what their needs might be?
I don't think it'll have implications regarding the needs of the child. Mm-hmm. Just have implications in terms of how we build throughout our cooperative. Mm-hmm. And I like the fact that it's a more standardized platform versus kind of all over the place.
But I'm sorry, I just don't want my question to be misinterpreted here. So apples to apples is everywhere here. The only one that may not be apples to apples is salaries. I'm assuming the benefits is apples to apples. In other words, we're not using a new methodology there, or we're using that tool for that as well.
Lori? I'm sorry, I don't mean to put Lori on the spotlight.
Well, and I'm not sure when the 1314 was developed, that would be used to forecasting progress or be used information.
I used information from Skyward and pulled that.
Yeah, for 1314. So I would say it probably is similar to the salary.
I would too. I'd say salary and benefits.
So those are the only two that may not be apples to apples.
Yes.
I mean, directionally correct.
I know.
Yeah.
That and capital equipment projects. But
say it again.
That and the big difference of $7 million.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but that's apples to apples. In other words, what I'm saying, when I say apples to apples, we calculated...
The methodology apples to apples?
Right, right.
Gotcha.
Okay, thank you.
So this is just a little bit different look at the previous slide. The revenues and expenditures are same as it's been previously presented, and then down here, the lower portion of this spreadsheet is where we show the actual surpluses or deficits associated with each fund, and that's projected to be a $7,071,000 deficit for this year. Again, we have about $7.9 million in capital projects projected for this year, though.
Mm-hmm. But it was
that
planned.
Accounts for the loss.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
What this, the next several slides really are just revenues and expenditures that are accounted for by the funds that I have to account for. All the numbers tie back. Again, you can see the $51.5 million in total revenue. And same thing again. This is a different look. These are what we call objects of salaries, the benefits, purchase services, and so forth. And then here are the various funds. And these are functions within the fund. So you have the education fund, and then we have all the regular instruction, pre-K, early childhood, summer school, blah, 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 all the other different types of functions within those funds.
Is the new lunch breakfast program for Hadley built into the report?
Yeah, for the expenses of that.
For food service accounts.
Okay, Mike. Go ahead. And so here is what I'm required to file with the state of Illinois is a tentative fund summary or tentative budget, and within that is a fund summary. So what I do is I go in and I take the fund balances that were projected last year on a cash basis. I roll in the revenues and expenses, and then you can see your surplus or projected deficit by fund. I then tap into what would be the approximate cash balances. I back out the June 15th receipt of taxes to come up with a very rough estimate of what projected cash balances will be next year. I was asked to put this chart together that really just shows the differences in revenues and expenditures by fund and O&M transportation and so forth. One of the new ideas that Paul thought would be helpful to us as we look at our budget is I compared the 13-14 budget to the 14-15 budget, and then we took the various programs, as you saw on an earlier slide, the various programs that are summarized by function code. We have direct instruction, student support, instructional support, general administration, and I compared to what those expenditures were this year versus last year.
I just turn it sideways. It's my new way of handling technology.
Mike, to rotate on our computers.
Yeah.
The PDF is...
When you're in... What do you do?
Two fingers down.
I should have done.
Oh.
Clockwise.
So two fingers down.
You didn't learn your clockwise.
No. Sorry, everybody.
So
we're just learning some new things here.
So we're
Patrick?
Go to D41.
You see?
No, I've got my thing open. No, oh, it's small. It's, yeah. I was doing really good.
Tell somebody.
Yeah, all this help.
And see, I can use it at home,
you double-click here.
Yeah, just watch.
Three fingers.
Just hold it down, and then there's an icon up there, too. You just hit.
All right. We're good. Sorry.
So
clicking with gas.
One of the other slides Paul asked me to take a look at are the salaries and benefits by department. As you can see, we put 70% of our dollars right into direct instruction, support services, and then CSO is the balance of the remaining 9%.
Bob, just a quick question on support services. Just no specific numbers, but how is that statistic change, that percent change? In terms of support services, and I'm thinking aid.
Well, it has to do with it's like O&M, everybody who does not have a direct hands on a child.
Okay, so outside of the classroom.
Correct. And then we thought we'd include in the budget packet this year the various school budgets and how they compare to 13-14, 14-15, and then a final column for the year-to-year comparisons if there were increases or decreases. And we have all the, these are all the schools as well as the departments. And then something else that we did, which is much different than what we've done previously, is we used a per student allocation. In other words, we told the building principals, you have X number of dollars for whether you're elementary school or X number of dollars for the junior high. And that was a different approach than what we've used previously.
You use that to have them budget these items
for their overall
total number. I told them if you can spend X number of dollars, let's say it's $80,000 for the elementary school, then they had to pick out how they were going to allocate those numbers within their mm-hmm. building budget.
Well, maybe I could raise this question since I'm still new. If this is a different process this year, How did you come up with that per student number?
We worked with the principals really talking about their budget, their budgeting needs, because we needed some consistency. We needed to say, well, why did this school get this amount? Why did this school get this amount? Why did Hadley have this amount? And there wasn't an exact answer for me. So what we said was, let's work together. Let's talk through what does that per pupil allocation look like. That's similar, but I'm able to have that conversation based off of per student allocation as opposed to a lump sum allocation that I didn't have a good rationale for why the amount was given.
Do we know, was it around 140 across the district in previous years for the elementary schools?
Yes.
Yeah, it was in the neighborhood. I mean, really close. Hadley was the one who had a... What were they at previously?
210.
Yeah.
220.
And it was a pretty significant budget. But within that budget, they were also paying co-curriculars. We're paying those co-curriculars, so we're taking some of that on.
So in previous years, they have been spending around 200 per student, and now this year they had to come back with a budget of 145.
Correct.
Only at Hadley were there around $200.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, but I would expect a junior high to have more expenses per student.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks.
The 1,200 kids.
You have a $40 interscholastic activity amount per student at Hadley, $40.
Yeah, you know, we took a look at that, and we had the amount that had typically been used for direct instruction, and then we took a look at what they were typically paying for other types of building expenditures. So we didn't think it would be best for us to allow them to spend that $220 or whatever it was. So we gave them a figure after going through it. We thought that about approximately $180 or $185 a child was a good number for things that would be spent more or less on direct instruction. And then we cost it out. We spend about $50,000 or $55,000 a year for all the intramural, interscholastic type of things, all the clubs. And so we gave them a separate number for that. And I think it was a good starting point because it gave us a number, a rationale number for application for this year, and also set some definition in terms of what we, when we move forward with our budgeting process, we'll kind of know exactly what it's been costing us per child per year, and if we need to, you know,
increase
or decrease that number based upon comments from our principals, at least we'll have some intelligent information to make that decision.
So this is a new way to do it, this per...
This was new.
Okay, so are we going to measure this actual then next year, and during this next year, report it on a regular basis and see where it's coming out?
Yes. One of the
and
things
then
that
I will be
expecting is that we're going to be looking at, as a cabinet, we'll look at all department and school budgets and see where we're at, and not just at the end of the year.
Yeah.
To do exactly what you just said.
So, Bob... The newness part of it, because I don't think it's all new, and I'm trying to understand it, right? So basically you took the general ledger codes, right, and you said, here's how much you spent last year in these categories, right?
Right.
Then what's new about it, because I think that's always been done, what's new about it is you said, okay, on a pure pupil basis, I'm allocating this much to the school and asking the principals, tell me where you want to spend that, and they saw where they spent last year. And in some areas, they decided to spend more. In some areas, they decided to spend less.
That's correct.
That's the approach that was taken.
Now, the thing that I really like about it is up until this year, a Churchill with 650 kids might be getting the same allocation as a Forest Glen with 570 kids. So this gave us an actual per-student allocation, and then their budgets were given, you know, if Churchill gets 140 times their 650, that's what their total building budget is, versus Forest Glen, which is their enrollment, times their per student allocation.
Yep. Okay.
I thought it worked out real well this year.
But ultimately, the principal and the school still had the ability to allocate those dollars where they deemed fit.
Yeah, which
they had the discretion.
Yeah, which I think
they've always done that.
And did you get feedback from the principals in terms of, obviously, one school is getting, you know, they were allocated, here's your chunk, here's your chunk. Did you get feedback from the principal saying, I get it, we're going to follow this, or did anyone say, well, mine really went down and that's going to be a problem for me?
You know, I heard positives.
You know, finally, I know exactly what I can spend per child. You know, they were grateful for that information. And I worked closely with all the principals. They all had questions about this new approach. And I don't say anyone was negative or reacted negatively in any respect.
Is this an Adam 12 thing, or is this...
From many school districts to a per pupil allocation. That
well,
is an Adam 12 thing.
It's going to give you the ability to compare building to building. You know, it's going to be the types of things we've been talking about for the last year about, actually, what you said, too, apples to apples. You're going to start to compare things where you don't just say, well, this school is less or more. You understand why.
Yeah, I think you've always been able to compare. The difference here is it's on a per student basis, which we've always done, but we've done it at an aggregate level, not at a general level.
I think Bob's example is one of the best examples. I mean, when you have two schools with varying populations, well, why am I receiving the same funding to support our students?
How much do the enrollments tend to fluctuate over the year? Is it fairly stable?
Overall enrollment, I guess, has been, I guess,
very stable.
Okay. We might have a flux of 5 or 6 students, you know, when we get the census report, and then we have to submit to the state a 100-day number, which is kind of our key number.
Okay, so we're not getting a situation where all of a sudden 30 new kids show up in August.
No.
The school doesn't have them. Okay.
And that's how the registration was processed. The registration process was changed this year due to an online process and really pushed in April so that we could get much cleaner numbers going in. Because I see actually the numbers on this, Bob, that the budget was from February 28th or 18th, I forget, something like that. So this is the number, the census number we're using for school.
Yes, I used the most up-to-date enrollment numbers that I had available when I did this budget.
Mm-hmm. Part of the year, okay.
And then we go on with the same format for the department budgets, and that's really the end of my presentation this evening. Our intention is to bring the budget back to you for formal adoption at our first meeting in August. We're going to be working in the next few weeks on providing additional updates to our Skyward program, to salaries and benefits, and further refining. I know Mike's budget has some changes to it, and just generally trying to refine and bring more precision to the final document that we'll bring you in August. So are there any other questions that you might have?
For members of the audience, we did this last meeting. We decided we voted to post it, mm-hmm. and it's posted where now?
Where do we post it?
Now? So if people want to look at it in more detail.
Copy your final website.
Okay.
I think it should be important to point out, too, that since your first presentation to the Finance Committee was April 28th,
mm-hmm.
if I'm correct,
mm-hmm.
and we have revisions at least
correct.
Three times through,
yeah.
and the members of the committee drill down beyond what Bob is showing here.
Very much so.
Especially on the, not so much on the school budgets, which I think when you guys do those numbers, by the way, it's going to be, you're talking 77,000 versus 90,000, so... It is surprising that it was equal before, but it's not a huge magnitude when you're looking at a $51 million budget. Mm-hmm. I think that's important for me. But I know for myself, I went through the IT budget with, and Mike took about an hour to stay out,
mm-hmm.
and we sat down and went through pretty much line by line. It was very helpful, and I thank Mike for that. One thing I learned with that, and I think this is important for one of our policy discussions, when you go through, when we do things, all year long, we get these items. This is one of the things why this presentation is different for us new people, Catherine, and the other three new people from last year, is because we are, you know, we get thrown things one item at a time all year long. So it kind of gets lost on you. So this approach to me is a lot better than 12 months ago. But what became evident when we went through the IT budget with Mike was that we have better than one-to-one devices. For students,
mm-hmm.
and it's just how they're being allocated at the K through fives. As we know, at Hadley, every kid's going to have their own Chromebook moving forward. So that was an interesting thing when you see it, because I know when I did a walkthrough with you at Lincoln for the math menus, there was some discussions by staff that you know they're not one to one because they're being used
differently. Yeah. But when you look at the hardcore numbers in IT, there's over 3,600 devices in this district. Mm-hmm. But that's one thing I learned by drilling down, and thought that was important for people to hear, given the topics we're talking about later on this agenda. So anyways.
Well, I appreciate you bringing that up, because the Finance Committee did an amazing job of vetting. It was probably three to five Finance Committee meetings where they either discussed it at length or that it was a agenda item on it, or maybe not the entire meeting.
Mm-hmm. So, no, just for logistics sakes, I mentioned this to Paul, and I think I told John already too. I'm going to be gone the August 11th meeting on vacation, so I won't be able to call in. So as I wrote down questions here that I'll save, I'll get those to you, but I want to funnel them through Finance too.
Thank you. In
case you've already had that conversation, I don't want to have double duty, but I'll get that done.
Perfect.
By the first of August or so.
Any other comments? I'm going to... Just kind of curious to me that the benefits went down the way they did, given trends. So I'll be asking questions about that. I don't know if there's a lesson learned here on how that happened, or maybe it just happened out of retirements. I don't know. So I'll be following up on that. And, I know we always talk about everything we do is a communication. And, I don't know if it's worth it on that summary page of yours.
Mm-hmm.
But, we show an increase of 17.49%. And that's what it is with the construction. Our increase is, if we weren't doing construction, it'd be 3.3%, just from an operations perspective, not a capital perspective. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's worth putting an asterisk there with an explanation that, that it's 3.3% without the capital improvements, and then, that within 2 years that should come back in line or something like that.
It could be a
way to communicate a spreadsheet a little more effectively.
We had the same situation when we abated years ago,
and
we put and then we had a bump.
Yeah.
And that had to be kind of reflected. Same type of thing, yep. Yeah.
So we'll add that to page 4. Thank you, sir.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Abraham Lincoln, HVAC chiller update.
Sure. As you know, the chiller at Lincoln went out the last day of school, and we've been looking for a replacement since. We went out, we found competitive pricing from three different manufacturers, Carrier, Trane, and Daikin. Carrier came back with the best price, and there was also a major qualifying factor that it had to be on site about the first week of August. So Carrier came in at the best price with a base cost of $23,600 with some recommended extras of $2,900 for a total cost of $26,500. Where we're at with that now is we'll be, with the board's approval, we'll be releasing that check tomorrow to the manufacturer. I believe delivery date has been pushed up about a week, so it's about August 5th or 6th. We are now out seeking competitive pricing from vendors for the installation, and I believe they're due back to me July 10th. I think they're due back to me Thursday, and then we'll make our final decision very quickly around time so we can get the vendors scheduled as we did with the manufacturers. And our goal is to have it fully installed and operational by about August 15th. Any questions on that?
Do you typically have Carrier on our buildings, or do you have a mix of them?
We have a mix of them.
Do you have any Carriers now?
I know I've purchased a couple of Trains. I can't say how many Carriers we have.
Okay.
But on the Carrier, you have the parts and labor warranty, but the others didn't provide for
that.
This
was a good a good price quote that we got from those folks. We thought it might be a little more expensive.
Yeah.
Any questions? All right, terrific. Next, construction update. Bob, Jack?
Thank you, Jess. You should have in your board packet a narrative of something that happened over the last 30 days. Just real briefly, basically, there's a big hole at Franklin. That's number one.
Is that the technical term for it?
Yep. Big hole. There's a lot of things torn apart inside the building and the areas adjacent to where the addition is going to be going to accommodate some of the interior modifications that had to take place with regard to mechanical systems and emergency egress through the building for when school gets back into session in August. Lincoln, the trailers have been moved to the north side of the building, been by there. And then also work has been taking place inside the building on the west end of the facility for the connection. And the ComEd service has been relocated, so the building was shut down and ComEd did their thing and it's back up and running. Forest Glen, the trailers have been moved there as well. And work has begun on the underground retention. There's pipe on site. Some of the grading work has started. Some of the demolition of the structure beneath the portable has taken place. And then at Churchill, we have the access road in on the east side of the building to the north side of the site. We've begun bringing in soil from the other sites and building the playground pad up. And so that work is that's what's been happening over the last 30 days. Going forward, at Franklin, we actually had our first pour today on footings. So concrete has started, which is good. So over the next 30 days, you'll start to see the structure going up at Franklin for the addition, which will be coordinated with everything else that has to happen there. Lincoln, we're going to be working on excavation for the structure on the west side of the site, as well as finishing the stairs and the ramps and so forth and the canopy for the trailer.
That's in the back.
For the back, right. And that's kind of a critical path item, actually, for your purposes, because we need to have that work done, and it has to have an occupancy inspection by your architect. It has to go to the RLE, and it has to come back so you can hold school in there. So from our standpoint, getting those trailers, ramps, stairs, canopies, and so forth up and running is a pretty important thing, which is happening at Forest Glen as well. And the underground storm detention work will be happening in mass over the next 30 days, as well as the finalization of the portable classroom trailers. Just kind of to digress on that point for a minute, Bob and I met with the school principal, Mary, yesterday with regard to the canopy. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of an open issue that we've talked about at the board level with regard to what do we do with that temporary walkway, both from a security standpoint and an aesthetic standpoint, because of the route that it takes from the trailers to the door number two at the northwest corner of the building. Her loud and strong preference is security. Keep my kids safe. And to that end, she really doesn't want anything that could obstruct views. So the idea of an aesthetic art wall or decoration on the canopy, on the street side of the canopy, was really something that she didn't feel very good about. She understood that from a neighborhood standpoint, maybe we have to do something, but she felt that something sporadic in a couple of spots might be more appropriate than something that covered that. Mm-hmm. You can kind of envision the easiest thing to do would be to put up cyclone fencing on the north side of the canopy structures, which will keep the kids separated from the public and keep it visible. Because there will be a construction fence between the canopy walkway and the construction zone to the south. So I told her what I would do is report to the board that those were her preferences and then come back to her with a couple of ideas. There might be a way to do a cyclone-type fencing that's maybe a little less,
chain link. Does the village have an ordinance around that? I know when we put up the portable classrooms, we were required to match color and then also landscape.
Because it's a temporary structure, there isn't a but this is part of the construction sequencing, so okay. It doesn't fall under the same architectural review process with the village as the portable classrooms do. It seems like a pretty safe and effective solution to come up with a fencing approach to that location. But it doesn't address the conversation we've had previously about an aesthetic. So that's where it stands right now.
Mm-hmm. And this is a 8-month issue, 12-month issue on the aesthetics?
Yes, and that was one of the things that she said, because she was under the impression for some reason it was 2 years, and I said, no, this is a 1-year issue. It's a 1-school-year issue, so you're right, about 9 months, and it's down. So, and we haven't had any problems so far with regard to what has been taking place. And we've got cyclone fencing up now. We've got the trailers relocated, so.
Because there's no fencing now under the current situation, but it is closer to the building, right? Or is that wrong?
I'm sorry, I didn't follow it.
There's no fencing in the current.
Oh, in the previous.
In the current, there was no fencing, but it was closer to the building.
Exactly. It was wide open. Mm-hmm. It was wide open. But now we're longer, we're further away from the building, we're closer to the street because we're coming along the north side of the building. And as we've talked about, security is.
Yeah.
It's necessary to do something. Now it's just a matter of doing it in such a way that we don't create a problem for somebody else.
Any comments on that?
I think you need to do what you think is best, and certainly security, I would be in favor of that than the aesthetic, obviously. So.
I think getting the principal's input is important, and you've done that.
She knows.
So.
Great.
She and her staff.
All right, so we'll keep going down that path with Mary.
Yeah, I would concur the security is important, the aesthetics, depends on the money, it's 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can somehow live with that, but
okay.
Depends on the expense from my perspective.
Great. All right, thanks. Churchill, over the next 30 days, we will see significant steps forward on the storm detention system and the playground pad. I think the concrete pipe is going to be delivered next week, so that installation will begin as long as this rain gives us some kind of a break.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, kind of on to the next item or the last item, which is the schedule. Joe, we did provide you the Primavera schedule update, so if you have any questions on that, and the rest of the board, please let me know.
Well, I have a simple question. I'm not phrasing this correctly, but how many days are allowed? I mean, I'm looking at the breakdown, and I was looking at the kind of those critical activities in red, kind of how it moves forward. How many days are built in or allowed when you start to get concerned that, in fact, you're going to be critically behind, that you're going to really lose time?
Well, a little bit of that's a very good question, and it somewhat depends on what the critical path activity is right now. Critical path activities are kind of lead and follow relationships.
Right.
You have to do one before the other. But the one critical path issue that we have is really at Franklin, and that is we have to be able to provide a secondary means of egress out of the gym during construction. We have one, but the second one comes right through the addition, essentially. It goes through the north side of the addition and the kind of the outdoor courtyard. So we have to be far enough along come the middle of August that we can provide an emergency egress through the construction site. And right now, of all the things that are going on, that is our number one critical path item.
Mm-hmm.
And the rain has slowed us down by about 5 days right now towards that goal. If it weren't for that item, 5 days is really, it's not an issue. Back to your original point, 5 days in this schedule right now with everything that we've got and kind of the float that we have built into the schedule would not concern me. 5 days behind schedule when we've got a mid-August deadline for that item is a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where we're at right now. That's the only thing that really has any schedule impact with regard to our process right now.
Thank you.
I have some questions.
Any other comments?
Please. I do have some questions. At Lincoln, you mentioned the ComEd relocation. You have an AT&T relocation. Is it still pending?
It is pending, and they have not responded to us, even though we had good success with them in the planning stage, and now they've kind of gone dark on us.
How much is AT&T's utility relocation a critical path for the construction?
Well, fortunately, it's really only in the retaining wall area of construction around the northwest corner.
we can do our excavation and footings and foundations without having a TNT room.
When does it become critical for you?
That will become critical until really till the end.
Till the end when you're doing the retaining wall.
Yep.
All right. Well, yep. Good luck with AT&T.
Yep.
Utility companies are near ComEd, getting ComEd done is key, obviously.
Yep, they were good.
A couple other questions for you. At Franklin, you guys are done with the stormwater relocation, mm-hmm. which is obviously great. Mm-hmm. Were there any issues with the relocation? Is there anything we should be aware of for future maintenance with how it was relocated? Or?
No, it happened well, and it actually, one of the things that you may want to be aware of as a board is that there's actually a public easement that runs along right through the middle of your site.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, with the village of Glen Allen.
Right.
Okay. So just that's something to be aware of.
At Franklin, there's a phase two parking area. I was trying to pick it off on the site plan. Can you just help me describe that? You have asphalt happening next June in Franklin.
Well, that's to come back, and really it's going to be the extension of the hard surface playground.
Right. Right. Playground?
Yeah. Yep.
I think we have parking going in over there.
And then we're going to finish the mass grading for the building pad at Forest Glen
yep.
this late summer. And what protection are we taking for winter events? We're compacting it. And
yeah, it's going to be a compacted building pad and just basically sit there until next spring.
Okay. You don't foresee any erosion or anything like that?
Well, it'll have to have the normal. We're going to keep that area fenced.
Okay.
And as well as the field because we have to get a growing season in. That area is not going to be usable for a year because we have to get a growing season in. So our construction fence will stay in place at Forest Glen.
Okay. So, but as far as drainage or any of that,
it'll be good.
Yep. And then, maybe I missed it, but on your schedule, there is not one for Churchill?
There was a separate one at the end that was just for the site work because we haven't bid out the building portion.
I cannot see it on that. That's okay. I remember double looking and triple looking and then finding it once, and now I can't find it. So it starts at the top. The thing is, I don't see the label for it.
It's got
I have it online.
Yeah.
It's administrative. Thanks.
No
problem. Just the way the blue comes up on the printout, you can't read the school with the blue.
It's
really
hard to see.
If you want to change that color for future, that'd be great.
Okay.
Now, my last question, because I like questions about this stuff, is the build. Playground installation at Churchill.
Yep.
Is that completed?
Because no.
I know it isn't, but is it completed for the school year?
No.
So they will use the old playground? Is that what I'm visualizing here?
The current schedule for Churchill is they will use the old playground, which is the old hard surface playground, mm-hmm. the two-thirds of the soft surface playground. And then sometime this fall, when we're done, we're going to be done with the new hard surface playground, and they'll continue to use two-thirds of the soft surface playground until we're done.
Okay.
That's the current schedule.
Gotcha.
So there'll be some sort of transition. Basically, we have to have the new hard surface playground done this fall, so that when we start in the spring, and we start, which will be on their existing hard surface, they've got a place to go.
Gotcha.
So really, during the winter months, they'll have more hard surface than they could ever
imagine.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
That's a bad one.
Well, if it's during the winter months, we're gonna have a good winter this year.
Any more questions?
Thank you, Jeff.
Yep.
Thank you.
I thought the work recap was just a nice, quick summary, and maybe we should put it on the website. I just went out there. We got the pictures, but mm-hmm. this might be a good way for the public just to see what's going on in the school.
Mm-hmm.
Who is updating the construction update? Who's responsible for that on the website? On the website, I mean.
It'll be Eric.
Eric will
start
tomorrow.
Yeah. I went out to see if it had been updated. I know we've had a break in between.
Yeah.
To that point, John, I'd be happy to speak with her, and even if we do a little blurb on each building, I'd be happy to.
Just reuse the same document. That's not create more work. Right?
Yeah, no,
just reuse the same document.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I would say about the document is just you know, just had a milestone for each school so people would understand it. But it just be, I mean, right now there are just pictures, right? And it looks like Paul's on a backhoe.
That's not Paul. Let's be really clear.
It's the guy with no hair.
Yeah.
So that could be.
Could be Kirk.
So I think that'd be a good community.
Yeah. And Jack will meet Erica on Friday.
Okay.
At our construction conversation.
All right. Keep the show moving along here.
Yep.
Discussion items. Board policy, this is the first reading.
Mm-hmm.
First policy is 9, the acceptable use of technology, AUP.
So policy committee met last week. Dean and Catherine had a great conversation. Went through the proposed policy. It is significantly different than the previous policy. But I'll hand it over to the two policy committee members to really talk about what they saw from the big picture viewpoint, and then I think we'll just go through page by page. So, Dean, Catherine?
So, we met, like Paul said, last week to go through this, and one of the big changes in the policy is that we had this in a few different spots in the policy manual, and now we're bringing it into one spot. And so then we started with a policy that was presented to us by the attorney and started to go through line by line through it.
Mm-hmm.
And this was 4 people over a few hours, and we spent a lot of time. There's a lot of critical discussion about it. All the changes you see are redlined in your copies. So you see where we have made a change. If you want to ask questions about any of those changes, we can go through what we were thinking when we made the change. There's more to do here. So maybe just to start, this is the first attempt at it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to go through it tonight. We'll go through it another time. We want to get the community in, and you've got some plans for how we're going to get the community in to weigh in on this and also to help us. I will tell you that there are differing views, which is not surprising, from the community. We hear on both sides, you know, concerns about our technology and what we're doing. I think the first thing we want to do is we want to come up with something that's clear. We want to come up with something that everybody can understand. I think someone mentioned it tonight. It might have been Ms. Oakley. About the training,
mm-hmm.
I think that this is getting complicated enough that we're going to have to boil this down and put it into something procedurally that we can train on, to train kids on it, to train parents on it, to train teachers on it. There was some anecdotal stuff that came up during the discussions that Dr. Gordon shared with us. I think that it was the idea of free tech days and things like that are something that weren't sanctioned and won't be sanctioned, I believe, in the future. So there's some tightening down we need to do. We need you all to look at it. We need the community to look at it. And then we need to go through this. But if you want to ask us anything about why we redlined something or changed something, we'll do our best to try and answer what our thought was. Mm-hmm. And you can help us through whether you agree with that or not.
No, this policy committee was a public meeting.
They all are.
Yep.
They all are. And we've only had one person ever attend the policy committee meeting, and he did sit through it with us for an awful long time and went through the details. So
but that wasn't
this. That wasn't.
That
was not.
That wasn't this one. That wasn't.
Know about it.
You would have. Okay. Well, we post it. See, part of the problem is we post these things.
It
was an email. Yeah. But we're going to have. We'll do a better job of making sure that the listening tours you will know about and you can be part of, and we're really interested in what your thought process is. And for the people who have made comments, to make sure that you can get us those comments in writing, because we'd like to go back over them. A lot of good ideas in there. We'd like to do some research on those ideas and see if it's appropriate to accommodate those in the policy.
Just a timeline for myself here, the way I can follow it,
mm-hmm.
maybe to make a clarification for others and correct me if I'm wrong. We're doing this first reading tonight. And sometime in early August, the goal is to have listening tours.
July 30th at 6:30. August 2nd at 8 a.m. It's a Saturday. And then board, the policy committee would come back together that following week.
And that will be a public
Monday, that, yes.
That will be another public meeting.
And these guys have to confirm it some dates with me on the 4th, 5th, or 6th, whatever works within their schedule.
And then the second reading would be
August
11th.
Correct.
And it's two readings to implement a policy. So therefore, if we follow that timeline and we can all agree and vote on something,
yeah,
then it would be implemented before the school year.
Yes. So. I think good summary.
And the date would be the 11th.
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
So for me and Catherine, I think you had talked about you're going to be on vacation that date too.
Potentially, but you know, I'm going to be involved with the work of the policy committee. So I'd say you're going to be back.
And if you're back, if you're here when we're meeting for the policy committee, you can come to the policy committee.
Mm-hmm. I could, yeah. Well, I'm thinking about it. I'm just making notes to myself to get questions and that type of thing ahead of not being able to be at the meeting. So. But thanks for clarifying that, Joe.
Okay. I think there, to your point, I think the timeline is right. There's, depending on what more we want to do with this, that could, you know, we may have to try to have another meeting or something because, you know, typically we do two readings and we go, but there's a lot in here, and it just depends on the comments that we'll start with tonight and then the listening tours on whether we have to have another meeting to get that done.
Now, we have a meeting scheduled for the 25th.
Of July?
No.
No, of August.
Of August.
Right.
Yes.
But that is too late,
for
implementing.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, if we're trying to have this ready for the school year, we don't have the luxury of a lot of meetings, the way I understand it.
We can have meetings. It just depends on the feedback we get with regards to board feedback, community feedback on this. So we can always have another meeting if we're not comfortable by the second reading, then we can always have another.
So that meeting would be between the 11th and the 25th.
Correct.
It
would
have to be sooner better than later.
Right.
And depending on how it goes in listening tours, you know, we can always do it before the 11th.
We can always what?
As long as we have 48 hours notice posting it, we can do one before the 11th if we need to.
Yeah.
Our commitment is to get this done and to be able to get it trained on before we start the school year.
That's what I'm saying. I don't
so
want
we need to meet more,
having
we'll meet
this
more.
Ready to implement when school starts in the fall. Because it's always another discussion if, you know, if we don't really force ourselves to get it done by a certain date, we can talk about this for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
And probably shouldn't.
And it was a very iterative process for us because as we started, we were going to go line by line, then we jumped all over the place. Mm-hmm. But that was to get some ideas down, and then we started back again at the beginning and went line by line. So it's going to take a while to get through all this. So.
Well, and tell me if this is a fair representation, but it sounds like pretty much what was submitted to us as the new policy. You guys made a few changes, but it seems like you were pleased with what you got from council on this, right? I mean, I don't see a ton of changes or red lines to the policy that was given to us, so it sounds like you guys went through this in detail and thought that this was appropriate.
I think there were two big areas, but you might amend what I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm.
One was how we defined a district activity. You know, whether that would be riding on a bus to a district-sponsored event, et cetera. So we worked on the language in that regard.
Okay.
And then we looked at the policy for the use of social media and all those related kinds of communications that could be legitimate for an employee of the district and what kind of oversight we wanted to provide for that. So I think those are two areas where we made some substantial digressions from what the attorney recommended.
Okay. And is this, I mean, I don't know if this is going to mean anything to you guys, but is that, that's the big cross-out area? Is that what you mean, the use of social media accounts,
yes.
Personal
yes.
accounts?
Right? Yep.
It's in section 6.
Yes.
Do you have a heading there? Do I have the right section? Employee using
section.
Section.
Yeah, it was based on employee.
Section 3, employee use of personal technology. So the big deletions were in section 3 that we recommended.
Focused on employees.
Correct.
Okay.
So this policy, when you guys tackled it, handles both students and employees fully 100%. However, it doesn't, for students, it treats a kindergartner the same as an eighth grader. Yes.
Yeah. Correct.
Okay. Yeah. It actually pre-K. As
correct.
Because we have pre-K. Okay.
I mean, it'd be at risk through.
Yeah. Right.
A couple of fundamental things that I think we agreed on, and you two, and Maureen is part of this too. So please chime in if we get off base here. One was the idea, I think you brought it up first, about the number of devices that we have in the school. Because we have so many devices in school, we don't think that there is a situation where you need to bring your own device for academic purposes. We don't think that there's a teaching need for someone to bring their own device.
How about for an extracurricular activity?
For what?
An extracurricular activity.
Talk a little bit more about
what
does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, what is, if I'm at Hadley, and I'm on the band, I'm traveling on buses, I'm doing things like that.
So they may have different needs. It may not be for education purposes. They're no longer in the school, but they are doing things within their extracurricular activity. And I don't know, maybe band students never use a computer to do anything, but my understanding of young children these days, they use technology for everything.
Yeah, they have a program, actually, that they do use.
Right. Yeah. So, but they can't use their own because they're not allowed to because that's a school activity. So anything with the band, they can't. If they have some practice thing on their iPhone, some practice thing on an iPad as they're traveling to an event, they're not allowed to use it, the way I understand this policy. Doesn't matter if it's... They can have a phone, they have to have it hidden, but they can't use whatever device that may help them perform better that day. If you're an athlete and you want to critique what you're doing before you go to a competition, you won't be able to watch film of you doing something. On your own device. You'd have to get one from school, but you're not going to get it from the school onto your bus, because everything stays at school. So I just, the practical nature of the way people, especially younger people, live today is a lot different than they did in the 1970s or maybe 80s when I was 70s for most of us, but 80s when we were young. So I just look at it, going to competitions on buses like I have with older students, I know that people are looking at iPads at, and this is wrestling specific, a wrestling match that they wrestled against a guy who they're going to go wrestle. And they're watching that match, not for 5 minutes, but for a long time. So they also want to do things to prepare for their match.
You're asking the scope of what is a school activity and when.
I mean, it's defined in here the way I interpreted it. So it's pretty clear that you can't have a device while you're at a school activity. If you want to read your Kindle, because that's what you read, you have, how many books do we need? Does a Hadley student read in a year?
20.
So you think they read on the way to an activity if they have an event that they're going to Springfield on to perform for a band? I believe they're probably reading. Are they reading a hard book or are they reading a Kindle? I'm reading a hard book, okay, but I don't think a student's probably reading a hard book, most likely. They're reading, The Perks of the Wallflower on a Kindle. That's my guess. I don't know. But I do know that we are limiting them from doing that, which, we all go on vacations, you go on a plane, you know what people have. They don't have hard books. Everybody next to me, the last time I was on a plane, was reading something on either an iPad, a Kindle, or something. I'm just asking questions because what we have is normal behavior by our students today, and are we taking that into full consideration? I understand the classroom. That I can see because you go into classrooms for educational purposes, they have the devices. That's one end of it. I mean, the cell phone end of communication end, for me, when you're at, if you're going to an event, I'm going to an event and I want to talk to my dad before I go do that event. He's in New York. I can't talk to him. I have an hour bus ride. I'm not allowed to talk to him. He can call me, but I can't answer. He can text me, but I can't turn it on.
I think today you're not allowed to call on a bus anyway. I don't know if this addresses your question or not, but
you have a text too.
Yeah.
And kids do text
They do.
On buses. More than they call.
They yeah, they're not callers.
Yeah, they're not callers. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My kids are too young to be doing
either.
But that said, you know, there are those communications that are happening today.
Yeah.
We know they are. Mm-hmm. And those would be an abrupt end given this policy. Every coach, every band leader, every extracurricular. And that's the focus for me in this discussion. There's other things too, but I just started thinking about what a normal day looks like for these children, and I'm like, we're going to take something away from them. And maybe that's the best thing to solve all these, you know, there's several behavioral issues that we've seen this past year. There's several students who've done this. From what I've heard, I thought it was only one, but I guess people got back to you, and there's more than one, or two, three?
We don't know. No,
well,
I asked every principal.
He requested in.
And there was one response from a parent to a principal saying something occurred. But that was it.
I was asked
by the community saying, hey, you need to ask. I put it out on the email.
June 20th, you sent
the letter. Yeah.
That was pretty specific if you know of an incident. So there's one that came from that, and then there's the one we know at Forest Glen that's
correct.
Publicized.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay. So I just want to put the scope of this together, because that's bad behavior. But now we're going to change everybody's behavior.
So I don't know if this addresses.
That's one of my.
I don't know if this addresses. This may address some of your concerns, because for me, one of the gaps in here was I didn't feel there was enough differentiation between, you know, K through five and six through eight.
Right.
So I think, to me, you know, this. You know, I don't know if this policy was for all schools in general, including high school or whatever. If it's targeted to elementary, but to me, I would think it would be wise to have something geared towards K through 5 in terms of maybe being a little more restrictive. They don't really have the activities like, yeah, they may have a field trip. Don't know if we still do it, but they may have a field trip to the Arboretum where there's a permission form that's filled out. And as a part of that permission form, maybe there's, you know, you can carry your cell phone with you and some rules around it. But to me, we got to separate K through 5 versus 6 through 8.
And that's why I asked the question initially in there on how they approached it.
Yeah.
Employees versus students. Students were all equal.
So that was,
there's
that was
other districts, there's unit districts that clearly do that.
Right.
And they separate out. And I think, you know, we're living in a different time than 1970, so we need to make sure we check in on that when we're completing and improving this policy.
So that was a gap for me in the policy itself. That's one that I think I would like the committee to address. And
what would you see different at, just so the policy committee can come back together and get some work done? What would the board like to see at the? Mm-hmm. It sounds like at the elementary level, very restrictive.
Well,
at the junior high, and maybe I'm in.
Well, I would really like to see what the listening tour say to that.
Okay.
I think fifth graders, I mean, I think, you know, there's a change fourth and fifth grade. I think that's where you start seeing children getting phones.
Totally, so many issues.
Yeah, so to me, but they go on the phone, the thing, I mean, clearly for me the gap is student activities. Their classroom time restriction at the highest level makes sense, but suddenly after school and I'm on school grounds, and I can only use my phone for an emergency purpose, that's my emergency, because if somebody else has an emergency to reach me, I can't turn on my phone to get that emergency. I mean, that's something lost in this policy, too. My mom could be in the hospital, and I can't go home, and I'm not going to know.
So let me address.
She may not be able to. She may have gotten a car accident or something like that.
Let me address that.
Yes.
So we talked about that, and we said, look, that before these existed, when that happened, somebody called the office, and the office went and got their kid. There's no reason that we can't still do that. Just because the kid has a phone, we don't have to allow that call during the day. It may not even be appropriate to call a kid during the day to say that your mother's been in an accident. We might want an adult to deliver that message to him. So,
no, that's true.
So we don't. So that hypothetical, though, we talked about it. And we said, look, you can still, for most of your emergencies, what you ought to be doing is calling the office, letting the office know, and the office should contact the student during the day.
You do. This is not redlined, though. This one line, you know,
which
on page two, is on the second page. on district property or during district-sponsored events and activities. Uses considered to be on district property or at a related event or activity would occur on strikes, school grounds, strikes during school hours, and when traveling to or from or a school activity, function, or event through district-sponsored transportation. So
yes.
The ability, right.
I mean, that's the key thing.
Yeah, so the ability, it says uses considered to be on district property. When there's that movement, like I'm on a bus with the fifth grade orchestra and they're coming to, you know, they're going to another school. I mean, who knows? I mean, you can't. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do two things here because I was trying to work through this from a policy standpoint, and there's a difference between policy and procedure. And we did get a couple of emails from a couple of community members, and I printed them out to bring them tonight, mm-hmm. And some good observations. What struck me is that under some of the suggestions were what I would call procedures versus policy. And you know, it's right. So here's the definition. So a policy tells us kind of what to do and why, where that procedure is, a kind of a when and how. If we think about it in those two strands. And some of the suggestions in these emails, some of the suggestions we've heard from community members through this, and then we'll, you know, here at the end of the month and the beginning of August, will be around more procedural things. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we do it and when do we allow it? And so what we have to, you know, consider, keep in consideration, is how detailed a policy becomes, and then it starts to blur into procedure. And I'll just give a quick example, and this was from years ago. I shared this with John and with Paul at the president's meeting when I was on the policy committee with Sam, and we were going over all the areas around harassment, and there was literally 30 bullet examples for employees on harassment issues. And it was so detailed, you know, he and I both looked at it and said, you know, this is, so now what if we're missing something?
Right.
You know, so I think some of what we're talking about is procedural and important, and you don't have to have a policy to write a procedure. That can be, you know, separate. But I, you know, this example of where you kind of you redline some of this stuff out, but kept this idea of when kids are traveling in a sponsored activity, they're still part of the district. Yeah. They're still under restriction or, you know,
they fall under the policy.
They fall under the policy for that, which I think is important. I don't know. Again, I want to just show of hands maybe. I agree that there needs to be a specific delineation between pre-K-5 and 6 through 8.
Do you think that's in the policy or in the procedure?
I agree with that question, yeah. Have to delineate that in the policy?
I do think, for me, it's in the policy.
I think I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree it's in the policy.
I disagree because I think it could be how the policy is written. The policy could be written, devices are only used for educational purposes only. The procedure could say, K through 5 follow federal, you know, I'm setting it up for my own kids, federal ratings of G and whatever, and 6 through 8 it follow the filters of preteen to whatever. So I think that goes again to the policy procedure. The policy,
but it could be, but it could be the why under policy. So it could be that K through 8 is this, and that describes under policy what it is and why we're doing it, why we're differentiating between pre-K 5 and 6 through 8.
Well, I'd like to hear the rationale on why there should be a difference between an eighth grader and a first grader in the use of a device. Mm-hmm. Topically, they're doing sophisticated.
But they're doing different things during their school hours or their activities. I think that's the clear distinction.
Well, and they have a different maturity. Mm-hmm. So use
topically, they're still supposed to be doing the same thing,
right.
Learning ABCs and 1, 2, 3s.
I'm with you there. The difference is they are doing different activities, and we are promoting them doing different activities beyond the classroom. Yet now we're prohibiting them when they're outside the classroom, but they're still in a school-sponsored event. And outside the classroom, it stops becoming all about education, and it's about being a well-rounded person so that you can be 21st century ready. And that's why extracurricular activities are so important. But there's a strong limitation of what these children do today. I mean, what's happening today and what this policy says, there is a, you go on a bus with the band and you will see something that violates the policy by probably 90% of the students. I mean, that's just a reality. And that's what we've written here. And that's why we're talking about it. I understand. There's no, we got to vet the problem. But the reality is, a 6th through 8th grader has all these clubs and all these things that they do through school-sponsored events. Well, K through 5 does PTA-sponsored events, chess club, and things like that. So there is, we've already made this distinction in our school. We separated them. But one's a junior high and, you know, one's K through 5. So, to me, it makes sense. I mean, other school districts do it.
If we ask the question differently, then
is the question differently policy and procedure? But
I'll say on concrete versus on the bus, on school hours, during school hours, or versus extracurricular activities. Because during school hours, it could simply be in your pocket, out of sight.
And that school hours isn't defined in here. So to me, school hours could be. Could be nine to nine for all I know.
I think what we have to look at is how much protection does the district have to extend to a student who's traveling to an event who's not on concrete, for example, and that's part of what we wrestled with. You know, when we had the policy meeting, you know, where do we draw the line and say, okay, we'll relax the policy a little bit because you're on a bus going to.
I don't look at it as relaxing the policy, though. I just think it's a different policy. It's not relaxing. Today, the kids use this technology. Oh. Misbehavior of the technology is a child misbehaving. I mean, we've had two incidents. It doesn't say take it away. Somebody drives, you know, and hits a tree. We don't take everybody's car away because one person did it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we have to be careful there of the restriction. I mean, I watched in the audience the last time something of this topic came up, and it was perps on a wallflower, and bam, and then the minute that was passed, the other side came in, and it filled the room beyond this, and the number of emails went through the roof. Of course, they were from Australia and everywhere else in the world, but, you know, that was the reality of it. So I think we have to be careful. I mean, we have to look at how are people using it today? Are they using it correctly, absent this one highlighted incident across the street, and another incident that was recently reported after the fact, and how far after, but very important incidences. But we have to look at the world we're living in and say,
I think the when and the how becomes important, and that's the procedural piece.
I think, and you guys know, I've always said policies will always be my weakness, right? So
that's my weakness.
The way I interpret what you highlighted here is this is a definition, and the definition of on district includes activities,
right?
So this isn't saying at this point, it's a definition, it's not saying you can or can't. Later on, when we go to the can or can't, right, to your point, it may be the same policy, maybe a different procedure, but it may also be a different policy. We might say that when you're doing activities that, you
know, what I'm arguing for,
right?
Yes, I'm
right. So I felt in the way you said it that you drew the conclusion right here.
Oh, no.
That's not done. Later on, we can adjust for that. So I think to make this discussion move a little forward, I think what we're asking the policy committee, so far we have sort of two things out there. One is maybe a differentiation either through policy or procedure on K through 5 and 6 through 8. And the second item I think we're hearing is for those activities, which are largely 6 through 8, but, you know, there are some field trips that occur at the K through 5. For those activities, how do we incorporate possibly the need of parents wanting their children to have their phone with them for whatever purposes through some sort of permission slip as that would be on the same field trip form anyway?
Right.
So those are two things that I'm hearing are gaps that we would like the policy committee to address.
But just for clarification on we should assess this now with the people who are with these children in the activities. Are these people using things beyond cell phones for preparation for their activities? If they are, then we should be aware of that so that we can take that into consideration if we choose to take a specific change to that area of the activities, the off-site or whatever, on the way to activities.
I mean, I think that's important. I think the cell phone part's important too, but the other devices, because they're not getting their Chromebook when they go on that bus.
So is that something the board wants us to look at as a policy committee? The differentiation of two levels,
yes.
Elementary, I hear.
And it could be, I mean, in some situations it may be done through policy, in some situations
absolutely.
It may be done through procedure.
Right. Yeah.
But I think
however we work it.
It's got to be clear for the community to understand, and most importantly for the students and the teachers and the administrators.
I just want to make sure we've got our marching orders as a policy committee.
And to be clear that, you know, for policy, I know there are a couple comments about kind of the heaviness of this. This is, and I know folks have looked at this, but this is District 87's policy. And their bring your own technology device, when it came out, and you know, as a parent, I downloaded the PDF. That was 12 pages of information too. So I think, you know, we've been referring to the attorneys doing this. They take this with IASB and press. You know, so this is not just for clarification for the record. This isn't our general counsel, our legal counsel, providing us something that hasn't been vetted. It's taken from school code IASB press, which we use, which is actually 87, 93, 204, Naperville, 203, all of them using that as that baseline, and us then adjusting for what we feel is important to for our students, faculty, staff, et cetera, and the community as well.
Dean, I know you were going to jump in.
Well, I'm fine because of what people have asked for. There's the nuances are lost on us about the issue, especially traveling and parents getting in touch with their kids. The one thing that I think we were careful about, and we went back and made sure that it was in the definition, is the bus.
Mm-hmm.
The bus is a unique time when kids are all together without a teacher. And if we say, hey, you're on a bus, you can use it to call your parents, that means they can also use it to do whatever else they want, because there's nobody on the bus who's going to police that. Which comes back to this need for a partnership between the educators, the parents, and the students. So we're going to have to, which goes back to training as well, we're going to have to come up with something very clear to make sure parents understand, sign, go over with their kids, the kids understand it. We're going to have some teeth in it if it's not followed and what's going to happen. So we get all that. We know it's all there. But I think that particularly the bus is a worrisome area, because once the kid kind of gets off of our school property and starts walking home, all these kids have phones. And it all depends on who your child happens to walk with or who they encounter along the way on what they're going to see. And we can't control that. Once they go home, and they have their snack, and all the kids come over and get invited over, you're in the parents' domain, in the kids' domain. So we can't control that either. So we recognize that. What we don't want to do is put kids, when they're in our care, in that situation. So I agree that if we look at a K-5 and 6-8, there might be something we can come up with there. But we certainly want to restrict it. At this point, we were talking, we want to restrict it to that parent-child communication. We don't want it to say, well, if you can have this out and use it on the bus, and maybe there's going to be some stuff that we can say you can use it for. It isn't going to be for texting a kid at the front of the bus something about a kid in the middle of the bus. Mm-hmm. That's what we don't want to have.
How does the district monitor that? How do we take responsibility for monitoring a policy?
On a bus ride home.
How are we doing it now?
There's no way. I mean, the reality behind that, there is no way. There's a bus driver.
It's after the fact.
Page eight, number five says,
and let
that's going to be your responsibility to do it.
Well, haven't there been cases in the past where a district has been held responsible for something that happened on a bus?
Non-electronic
devices.
We're responsible when the kids are on bus.
But going to Erica's question of the policy of a cell phone on a bus, that's going to be really hard for the bus driver to police. Well, it's not going to occur. The bus driver has enough things going on.
You prefer the bus driver drives the bus.
Yes.
No, at that point, you have a policy that allows you to go back to a student who misuses an electronic device and say,
here is the policy. We can't tolerate this kind of behavior on the bus because it's damaging in some way or other. I mean, I don't think any of us are pretending that bus drivers are going to have to be checking every student that gets on the bus. But I think the attorneys are giving us some language that we could use if somebody did use a device inappropriately on a bus.
Well, we're saying use a device.
Well, I mean, use it inappropriately.
Yeah, but right here, this says just use it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't use it unless it's an emergency.
That's what it's right now.
Trying to find an emergency, but that's what it says.
So what we were trying to get at with the emergency, because we spent a lot of time talking about emergency, too. What we really want to have it is that if a parent needs to get a hold of a child or a child feels they need to get a hold of a parent, that seems to be the times we're living in.
Well, that's the one scenario where you can't call a school and have the...
Right, you can't call a school. So you're
more after school.
That's exactly right. So we had to figure out a way to allow for that. The point is it's going to come down to the procedure and how we implement it for how this happens. And someone asked, I think you said, how do we do this on the bus now? I would argue that most of any discipline that happens on the bus is an after the fact.
Right.
It's when it's reported that something
happened. Right.
We spend an awful lot of time going back to get everybody's take on what happened. And then the administration has to use their best judgment on how to react to that and what to do with that.
I think what you have, though, is what is today's appropriate behavior and what is the behavior of students and parents that have cell phones. I mean, I know people who have teenagers and they communicate with their kids a lot texting. It's just the world we live in. I mean, we live in a different world today and we can't go back and say this is... Society's wrong. Technology's wrong. We can't live in that.
Well, we're not.
But we are.
We're just saying it's not appropriate to do it during school hours when you're in
class.
Well,
that's. But we're saying on the bus too. So, and I know people are. It sounds like I'm just making my point because the policy is pretty clear. You can't use your cell phone.
You're not going to use it during a wrestling event, right? When you're out on the mat, you're not going to have the phone. And you're not going to use it in school, so it seems like we're all
during work.
During
I think I do have a policy on board members.
What we're trying to do is figure out what is the appropriate.
Well,
we want to get to what's appropriate.
So
not what they do when they're at home. I can't deal with that.
I'm just saying that in today, children and parents communicate throughout the day. And that may be, for some kids, at lunchtime. That may be right after school. That may be why I'm on the bus on my way home telling them I'm okay and I'm on my way. Parents, call it over-communicate. But, you know, if that's their choice, that's what they want to do with their child. They're the ones who brought
it. That's what we're trying to balance.
But if we read page 8.
What page are you on?
Page 8, number 5, or page 83.
83.
Yes. No, what you're saying is number 5, section 2.
Yeah.
Section 2 under cell phone, number 5.
Yeah.
That is what gave us the ability to, that's why we left it the way it is.
Inappropriate.
Exactly.
That allows Paul to say, Joe, you can watch your wrestling match on your competition on the bus. That's not inappropriate.
That's what we're trying to do. So that section,
it says
number
cell phone,
five,
but
cell phone,
maybe you can change it to first page.
You go to page 8, section 2.
No, they have it highlighted.
Section 2, number 5.
Yeah.
That's your wiggle.
The decision of what constitutes an emergency or inappropriate cell use will be
all
the responsibility.
Right. Well, I will say that I did not take that vague language as meaning that, but I can see...
But that goes to the policy versus the
procedure. Right.
And that's what...
And maybe that's where, again, from a procedural standpoint, the when and how we delineate that. I mean, that was a comment on one of the emails that we got in particular to that, is that it was ambiguous, and I already made that note to myself anyway. So, that's where I think procedure becomes our default, and where we then say to parents, here's the policy, here's the procedure, understand that with your children. That's where the training comes in, the sign-off. I mean, those other pieces where they have to understand that. I mean, we've all been looking at policies. All of us have been doing our own homework on this. I know that. I mean, we have a lot of really well-educated parents here and not here, on this subject, too. And every policy that I've written, whether it was, elementary, middle, or high, has some really definitive language. This will not happen. You will not do this. And we know that there are going to be situations where the policy is going to be challenged.
As long as the procedures are clear.
But if the procedures are clear and that we can, you know, and you know, re-educating teachers and staff and building principals and our building leadership teams, this is a great opportunity for them to make sure that this is reinforced and that it, you know, it all comes down to us as parents and what we, you know, the work that we do as well. But I'm, you know, that, I get number five, I understand that, it's fuzzy, and so that's the other piece that I would ask that you take a look at
okay.
in committee, and, you know, certainly all of us can give any insight.
Yep, I am.
You think it's fuzzy because it's, you think it needs to be more restrictive?
I think, I think that number five is a good example of that section two under policy, you know, that what to do and why. You know, what will happen is if something inappropriate is deemed, is identified, then the why, then the when, or the procedure piece would have to clarify what that means. A, who's the district administration? Who does that default to? And or that individual's next person? And then specifically what that procedure would be. Because if I'm, you know, listening to a little bit of what Joe was saying, if I'm a parent and my, I told my child, okay, I'll put this on the record so it'll be out there. So Carl, right, has to take an allergy pill.
Why don't we, let's just say, Bob.
Yeah,
let's just say Carl.
A kid has to take an allergy pill midday for 4 months in a row. And the policy is that that allergy pill goes to the nurse. And that child, every day for 4 months, has to go and get that pill, unlocked, and give it to him. I might put that pill in tinfoil and stick it in his lunch. So, you know, we know that some parents are going to say, hypothetically, you know, I know what this says, but don't worry about it, honey. You know, in the back of the bus, I want to make sure that you're turning on that phone and making sure that I know that you're there. And I get that, because some parents are going to want that access.
Guess,
so that's where the procedure comes in.
I mean, for me, and I don't know if it's just being old-fashioned or not, but I just, you know, when we talk cell phones, we're not talking flip phones anymore, right? We're talking
smartphones.
Smartphone, right? It's everything. And I, you know, I just don't see, and I think it actually would be good for kids to not have a smartphone in K through 5 while they're in school. The bus thing. Maybe the procedure different or the policy, whatever. But I just don't see the need. To me, it'd be great to have them disconnected from that time,
but
talking to each other, engaging, having conversation.
Here's the thing: what you said though makes me flip it to the other way. Because right now they don't have a cell phone. Whether they have it, but. They can't use it on school, which I don't know that.
Which I'm saying, I think is for me, that's okay.
That's fine.
Right.
But I'm also saying that's fine for sixth and eighth graders, or sixth, seventh, and eighth graders.
Could be.
I'm saying it is.
Yeah.
So I'm clear. During school educational time, they don't need that.
Right.
I mean, educational time for me is pretty defined. It's when you're in class. If you're in study hall, that's a little different.
Yeah.
If you're at lunchtime, this is for sixth through eighth graders.
Right.
It's a little different. If you're on the bus, or you're going to a school activity, you're traveling with the band, or is it my favorite, the wrestling team, I'm good with it. But during educational times, there's no reason to have it on.
I mean, so then you're defining educational time. I mean, to me, lunch is educational time. You're learning to socialize. You're talking to people. You're not just sitting there doing this during lunch.
Then the bus is educational time, and so is extracurricular activities, because you're becoming a well-rounded person because you do all these things.
Right.
That's the extension of your social time. So then that's no habit on the bus.
So, for instance, at Hadley,
the only thing that makes me think about the bus thing is that is the one time where you can't really call a school and say, hey, I got an emergency, I need my kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, so maybe that's a permission slip approach or whatever, but
yeah, I'm not
there's
sure
a way
you can
to
do it, you know, when you're at an event, either a school event.
Since we brought that up a couple of times, let's spend just a minute on that. So
no way it's going to be a minute.
If you don't interrupt me, you don't disagree with
me. Sales, everybody agrees with what you're saying.
It's 9:21, but soon it'll be 9:22. if your child's on a bus and they're going from point A to point B, I don't know that there's anything great that happens halfway through the bus ride. The bus driver's not going to stop and let your kid off the bus. So waiting until the end when they get to wherever they're going to go is not going to be the end of the world. And there's going to be someone there, an administrator or somebody who's in charge. So they can get that message when they get there.
Oh,
so theoretically, you could do that. There's a coach, there's a teacher.
How do I get all the coach?
You should have a coach's number.
So the coach
could have a phone.
I coach hockey now.
So that's okay for the... Okay, so the parent has to go through the coach. I don't know that...
Right.
I don't think our parents are ready for that. That's the one person... I mean,
that's right, right. The policy. The coach is help our parents.
Yeah, but the coach's phone is out of the battery because he's taking so many taxis. You know, then he's out of the battery. I mean, I don't see parents doing that today. That's not how they're acting. We have to live within the world we're living in. And
be careful with the hypotheticals of, like, the emergencies
right.
and stuff, because...
And that's the thing. Policy cannot account for
right.
every single
yes.
situation.
Yeah. Thank you.
And our job, as we're working through this, is to think both holistically with that security piece, which is critical, and then to be thinking about what out of here might need that procedure piece written in that can balance... Zoe, I'm thinking about it, can balance some of the needs of the larger constituency. I mean, I don't disagree with you, John, in terms of wanting the, you know, disconnect. You know, we have rules about that in our house still. But if you think back to when we had a presentation by fifth graders from Lincoln School. I forget if it was when you guys were on the board or before. But they were the ambassadors, all lined up here. Every child in their back left pocket had a phone on them. And they were with their parents coming to a school event. So it's balancing this reality of how we know kids with mm-hmm. their parents, because parents do this. Parents are on phones with their kids in the car. They're making phone calls to, I don't know, whomever, and their children are in the car with them, not having a conversation, you know, or walking them down the street on the phone. I mean, it's ubiquitous. It's everybody... uses technology in a way that is ease of use. And so when I read number 2 on page 8, during school hours, cell phones were required to be turned off and kept out of sight, I had made a note for myself, well, let's clarify that. For, you know, at a high school level, they're told that they have to be kept out of sight, meaning like in their backpack or something like that. In my son's study hall, they were allowed to take them out to listen to music and study. In some classes, with their being real technology now, some classes teachers would let them take it out to use in Spanish their Spanish dictionary on their smartphone. Other classes, he never took it out to use it. They just never used it. So it was dependent upon the teacher and what they needed. So.
And you're talking specifically there about high school.
Right, at high school. At one of the policies I read at a junior high level, they had a one-to-one program, and so cell phones had to be kept in the lockers unless they had written permission, and the parent requested permission for the child to keep their cell phone with them during the day in their Hadley backpack or whatever it might be. So they, you know, had a procedure that they had to follow and get approved, you know, through the school administration for that.
So that's probably just hits the other topic of there are some definitions that probably need to be flushed out in further detail because right. they're a little open-ended.
Right. So that idea of out of sight is, you know, what that means to one child. If I have it in my backpack, I'm not looking at it, but to the teacher it might be, but it's on buzz and you can hear it and it's disruptive, which is the next line.
Right.
Showing how to disrupt the learning environment. So I think it will help us to do this work on stratifying K through 5, pre-K through 5, and then 6 through 8. Because the other reality, and this is to Joe's point, we, just like we have our 5th graders starting to learn how to do that transition into 6th grade, we have to help our 7th and 8th graders start to learn to that transition into high school. And high school is going to be full-on iPad starting freshman year. That's it. So they have there's a whole other set of rules and policies for them. And
they're
how do we help
there,
them?
Though. I mean, not in the phone, but they block out, you know, Facebook and other things. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
High school.
Yeah.
87.
Yeah, and that's right, and that's
yeah.
in their policy. They
right.
do.
I mean,
but what I'm saying is, we have to help our kids get prepared for appropriate use of technology.
But we're not
And just so you know, even with that Facebook where they blocked that out, kids don't use it anymore anyway. That's kind of like so last week.
We use it.
That's us.
That's so last week.
Can I ask a clarifying question just on this on page 3? Because we're flipping. I know, we're not really flipping the page 8.
Yeah, no.
There's some in between. But I think I have a quick question on this.
Which page, Joe?
Page 3. It's under acceptable use general. It speaks of only authorized users may use digital electronic resources. I mean, is that, are we, is this talking about employees, or is it talking about everybody, students? And what is authorized users?
So,
where are we trying to get to? I guess.
So, when you come into the district, if you jump on as a guest,
me, that right here.
Yeah.
Okay.
You have to sign a form and say that you understand what our acceptable use policy is,
okay,
and adhere to it.
That's fine. The next sentence where is where I get it. This includes connecting personal devices, technology devices, including internet and Wi-Fi. To me, no one should have a personal device hooked onto our Wi-Fi. I just don't see the reason why. I mean, that's why should anybody be on our Wi-Fi?
Outside of that,
because
like
I'm
on it.
Yeah, remember that we had a discussion about emails and how they, especially with employees,
every parent that
forget
comes
kids
in,
for a minute.
You know.
With employees, especially, that there's this commingling of email systems on their device. So they're going to get the D41 email, okay, they might get their personal
email.
Because
this is where I'm going with it. I'm okay now. I'm okay with Paul and employees doing it.
Yeah.
But then this is saying students. And I'm like, why should students, and that's what I wrote down, why should students be allowed to hook their device?
Is that what it says? That they're
it says authorized users.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's
yeah,
why
should.
I want that to be
more specific.
And that students aren't authorized users.
Yeah, well, here they are, the way I'm an authorized user. But I'm saying students should not be allowed to get on the internet or Wi-Fi with their personal devices. I understand why Paul needs to be on it,
mm-hmm,
because it's going to save his data plan.
We can straighten that out.
So, guys,
that's
where's that paragraph, Joe?
Oh, that's
bottom
of page 3. It's the first paragraph.
It's
on
highlighted.
I
appreciate the thought.
Yeah.
I don't know how easy that would be to implement.
Well, I think you know it. I mean, if somebody comes in with their cell phone.
Well, you'd need to have a. Everybody needs to have a password.
This is one of those policies that will be set up for failure. Because are we going to spend the resources and the energy to check if I'm on the Wi-Fi spot?
Well, you can be on.
Or.
A student. Well, no. It's the same thing. If somebody's doing something wrong and you find out they're doing it wrong, at least it's wrong, you know?
Mike,
yeah,
with our guest user policy, do they need a password?
Yeah, they need
so
a password.
To get on the Wi-Fi, you got to have a password.
So you got a password. Then
but there's a lot of things wrong that people do. I mean, they can bring a magazine.
I never do anything.
Then I know. Besides,
they should all say password. Within 4 seconds, every student.
Right, so I guess
that's what text, the group text is for.
And how are you going to know if the device is a student or a parent or a guest?
I think it gets down to slippery
because you
miss this one and then you miss this one. Well, we're not really going to enforce that one because everybody does.
About having 20 bullet points you're going to miss.
I think it's important though, and I'll tell you why. It's the culture, okay? And you're setting the line here. Your personal device, you can have it, but you can't be on our Wi-Fi. Your Wi-Fi is on the school device, and that's it. If you want to use this device that does 9 million things, one of them you're not doing is going on Wi-Fi. So start using your data plan, because if you are using your data plan, I can tell you who's going to find out. Your parents will, because their cost is going to go through the roof, and they're going to see it on the bill. It's a cultural thing. Weave it in there. Make the point. And it's an important point because that's why we're here today.
Okay, so we got that.
So, guys, let me ask.
That's the reason.
Let me ask this process question here. I don't mind having a discussion. You guys know I'll stay here forever. So, do we?
We need a break now.
Well, do we? You know, so the policy committee gave us this first reading.
Yes.
Do we all? I don't know if you guys got
feedback. Give us your thoughts
from anybody.
Well,
but
no, so we do. Give us your thoughts.
Let's get our thoughts together. Right?
Please do us a favor, and just send your thoughts to Paul.
Yes.
Because
okay,
we get into, there's right, some strange things. Well,
let's get our thoughts out. You've captured a few, right? Mm-hmm. It sounds like the few that we've captured are the differentiation on K through 5 versus yep. 6 through 8. There's the whole
activities.
Activities. There's the greater clarification of definition was another one. I didn't say it, but another one for me is, you know, these parents have to sign this form or whatever. You know, is there a way to simplify reading 24 pages and, you know, so that they understand? I mean, give them the 24 pages, but maybe the key of what it means. But so
we're talking about training. You're going to have the 24 pages because you've got to have the 24
right,
pages,
no.
but there's got to be a training thing with it to explain it, those 24. And almost to unravel the legal speak of the 24
right.
pages.
And so you guys have those. So let's. When can we get these guys' feedback so that they can... I mean, I assume you guys are going to have to get together and really go... I mean, this is... I would say this is at least 2-3 hour sessions.
You'd be surprised. It's going to take at least that.
Yeah, and then there's the listening tour input that we want to.
I want to get that before we start changing the policy. It makes no sense for us to start changing the policy before the listening tour because we'd like to get that input.
So it makes sense that we give you our feedback, the listening tour. So
that feedback will help us craft the questions
for the listening
for the community. As I'm listening, I'm hearing some good questions that we would phrase.
I think that's great to summarize your thoughts and all your comments mm-hmm. and write them to Paul. And I pre-wrote you
yep.
mine. But I think it behooves us to have your opinions out there now because this is a serious issue in our community.
Yep.
And take the time. If we're here for another 30 minutes, it's a serious issue. And we should state, hey, I think junior high kids should have this in K through 5, which is what we've done. I mean, we'll get the feedback from the community if we put our opinions out there. I mean, I watched some things go on over the last year, and people think we're doing things behind the scenes, and it doesn't make sense to me because it's efficient to do what you just said, John, and it's inefficient for us to spend another hour here going back and forth. But I think the community is asking us to do that.
Yeah.
Maybe not on all topics. Maybe they can say, IT is one you do it on the budget, don't do it. Construction, Joe, stop your questions about detention at Forest Glen. And, you know,
feel free to write us emails about that.
No, I mean...
It's already on the plan.
I think transparency is something that this board gets... It's out there that we're not transparent. Yeah. Well,
and that's what we are trying to do.
Let's keep talking. I mean, I'm fine talking.
No, I mean, if we're going to talk about it, I think we should go broader strokes, perhaps, than all the hypotheticals I came up with. I'll stop doing that.
So from a policy perspective to broader strokes and to procedures and policy, what are you trying to solve with this policy? What are we trying to solve with this policy? Are we trying to say no personal devices in district thing? Are we saying we're not trying to disrupt the educational environment?
Yeah, let me take a stab at that. I think we are trying to maintain the effective educational environment. And we want to make sure that we have some teeth in a policy if people are disrupting that environment or using the technology inappropriately. We've got it defined in a policy that we can say, here is where our expectation is, and this is where you fell short, and therefore you are disciplined.
So the consequences, I think, are already established by the student disciplinary steps.
Right.
So we can always say, and then it follows the student disciplinary steps.
We point to that. We don't
so truly what we're trying to tackle from a policy perspective is the disruption of the educational environment. If that is, everybody's just walking around with their cell phones in hand.
Define disruption, also, is there's a safety issue. People don't want their kids being exposed to things by other kids.
Well,
and so, to me, that's disruption.
Right.
And as long as it includes that, then yes.
But we're in a public school. I mean, at some point, we're going to reach a line where we can't avoid exposing one student to what some other student does.
Exactly.
You want to break the policy if it's an infraction.
Right. That's the procedures.
But our,
is
our,
how to address it.
And so to that point, what we're talking about, and actually this brings up something, and I'll make a copy of this, but we have on page 15 under publications and district social media a place about monitoring responsibilities. I think a little bit deeper dive on this to include the awareness of others, parents included, of monitoring capabilities so that there's an understanding that, you know, if your child does X, whatever that was, you know, and for any, you know, just for your kids, right? This is the monitoring capabilities that the district has in place, and is some of what, you know, the work that Mike's doing and his team is doing in the summertime too. I feel like that's missing, and that's one of those larger. I want to have this be more inclusive of what our parents expected. We're asking the district to raise the bar, and underneath that, district administrators, building leaders, teachers, staff. Holistically staff, right, anybody, our students, but we have to raise the bar in our parents as well.
So, to that and to your point, Catherine, your topics, Catherine, I think we need to surround disruption and surround when, and then we go into procedures, because for me, disruption is somebody else's educational learning, right? So you go into, okay, how are we going to measure that? So define what disruption is, how's it vetted that it's disruption, and when is disruption going to occur? If you have the cell phone on you, on, off, whatever, I think you are starting to get into the weeds a bit. But from a policy perspective, what you're trying to solve is a disruption issue. This disruption issue was pornography. The next disruption issue may be, you know, some kid going out on a religious hate site. Well, I was doing it for a program. Well, is that disruption or is that, you know, educational purposing? So I think if you say disruption and then you define how that disruption is going to be measured, you already have a consequence section.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Are we going to be able to include everything?
That's my problem.
I don't want it to include everything.
Yeah,
and I don't want it to include,
okay.
I don't want it to say cell phones, iPads, Blackberries, next generation.
Well, there's going to be watches. There's everything.
Exactly. Watches, all that stuff. You say electronic devices or however you say it. Mm-hmm. But what you're really trying to solve is disruption. And that gets to the school bus issue. Is it disruptive to the school bus riders? Is it during study hall? Is it disruptive to the school bus or the study hall students and teachers? We're not trying to solve a cell phone issue here. We're trying to solve a disruption issue here. And if we put that glass to it, this might become, I don't want to say easier, but
Policy becomes easier,
which we want to do, right?
For us.
In terms of a policy draft.
Well, it definitely gives more.
Don't turn this into.
It gives more flexibility.
Yeah, don't turn this into a cell phone technology thing. Turn this into an outside disruption conversation.
Well, with the changes in technology, it makes sense to do that because then you're changing your procedure and not your policy all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, this was one of my concerns. Mm-hmm. We couldn't really fix with what we were given to work with, but I was hoping we could have something that would be broad enough to cover future devices that we don't know what they're going to be a year from now.
Right.
You know, a lot of the perspective here is from the cell phone perspective, and we've already seen that that's only one small bit of the technology.
So how do we feel about, Joe, you brought this up, just in general, what do board members think about the issue of, accommodation for a student who, say, for instance, has visual problems, and so they can't use the Chromebook or the netbook or whatever, and so their parents approaches them a specialized tool, right? That, I think, would be procedural. And so that would go through maybe their IEP or 504 or something like that.
Yeah.
Could be under
mm-hmm.
that. And that's specific to that student and their need to learn in that way.
But we're not
and
saying...
We want to be able to allow for that.
Right. So I'm thinking back to the presentation that Chris Abbott did when we were at Hadley, and one of the things he showed us is he was, you know, kind of doing the... we just redid the our media center over there, learning center, and there was a picture of a student on a smartphone reading, and he said to us, and I went over and observed, in fact, he was reading a book that was assigned by the teacher. He downloaded it onto his phone. That's how he chose to read it. So that's that piece at that middle school level where kids are more fluent in terms of and making choices about how they want to read and learn. Do you know what I mean?
Which that's is what we want them
to do, is have some flexibility in that space, right? So that's why I think that differentiation becomes important, and then the procedure.
Wait, can we go one thing on the procedure, though? Because we have a time. We're self-imposing a timeline because I think we all feel it's important.
Right.
And, okay, so we simplified the policy. Well, if that's what we're going to do, and it sounds like, to me, on first blush, a great idea, Patrick, then we better have, Paul, you and your team, principals, and whomever you deem appropriate, I'm not doing that, they should be working on procedure tomorrow because you got to get that detail and that out. And that needs to be out there for the listening tour. So that, because if I'm, and I am a parent, I want to know the answers to that drill down.
Procedure follows policy. I've got to know where the board's at so I can write. Yeah. So
we've got to give you enough time.
You do, but I don't want to craft a procedure that doesn't meet your outcomes and waste my time and your time and everyone else's.
And some of it, when it came to discipline, we've sort of already said, we already have a discipline procedure in place. I don't want to have to we don't need a separate discipline procedure for this.
It could just be semantics here, but it could be you just lifting a lot of this language out and saying, the procedure is this, and we're going to tweak it for D41. The policy is a disruptive policy.
You can go piggyback somebody else's.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the disruptions are this, right? I mean, whether you bring your own device or not, right? The disruption is whether you...
That's what this is.
Huh?
That's what this is about.
Yeah, I mean, it's whether you bring your own device, it's whether you access social media sites, it's... I mean, the disruptions are here.
In today's world, they are.
What I hear...
So you use generic terms, but I mean...
No, in procedure, you use specific, and then you update the procedure every year.
But I mean, the disruptions are here on what's acceptable to use, what's not acceptable.
With one of the first notes I wrote on my new thing here is it's clear, and this goes to what Catherine just said, I mean, we don't know what tomorrow's about, and that was kind of what I was leading to. We have to, it has to be, not a policy, but it has to be our procedure to review our procedures given the technology changes that we face. And they're happening.
Yeah,
the iWatches are going to be here. And there's going to be an iWatch. At Christmas in January, people are going to have iWatches. And our procedure is going to be not covering iWatches. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just the reality. So
you're dying back here.
I am. I'm dying because even when I came to college originally in our very first meeting, we said, this policy is not written for kids. This policy is written for adults, and we need to simplify the language. And
yes, we do.
The conversation that I had with Mike, you say to your kids, don't do this, don't do that, don't do that, and then they do something else that's sort of similar to what you told them not to do, but you didn't tell me not to do that. And so I had to rethink this whole concept and decide, what is the point? Why are you using technology in school? And I think your angle should really be from... you have Ignite Passion, Inspire Excellence. The policy should be writing, why are we using technology in school? Why is it even in the school? It's to enhance the educational experience. And so the inclusion is, it's okay for anything that is enhancing the educational experience, and we can make exceptions for things that are enhancing the educational experience. And it's excluded for all those other things, because all those other things are ill-defined, you know? So one person may say gaming is not disruptive. Another person is going to say gaming is disruptive. You know,
but that's not what our policy is about.
That's inappropriate. I just think from a general umbrella, you're talking about inclusion of why you're using it, and then sort of encompass some of those bad things into something that you can.
It goes back to what's the educational value of what we're doing with technology.
That's what it goes back to.
Because I had to say to my kids, you are getting technology at school for educational purposes. If you use that computer for anything
there,
other than educational, it's inappropriate. And that's how we've deemed it now in our house. And it's simple that way.
So I hope you're coming to the listening tour.
Right. But I don't see it that way, though, because, education, you're not allowed to use it for educational purposes. I mean, we stated
that. BYOD.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's no.
So we are providing a lot of technology for educational purposes.
Right.
So the one thing that I keep hearing is kind of the before after school bus extracurricular. It sounds like there is some really we have a lot of consensus around the school day. What's happening during the day? Basically, you're not having your own technology because we have a lot of it. There's still a little bit at the junior high level. Would we open that door a little bit for junior high students at all?
Yeah.
That to me, I feel like we've got to get there because I think we've got a pretty good policy here in the works. It is lengthy, but I think it's intended to be lengthy so we can have some real definition to it. Do we need to ensure that it's student friendly? Absolutely. Absolutely. But what I'm hearing is around the edges. What occurs before, after school? I think we've talked a little bit about it, but this whole bus piece,
yeah,
I think it's a good conversation, especially the one Erica brought up. How are we ever going to police this thing? And you have a policy that is no longer... We can't police it before. I mean, on a bus, you can't do that. What happens on an athletic trip,
because
you have two or three coaches, I think that's where we're at right now, unless it's something very different.
Well, I'd like to add, and maybe I'm the only one here, and that's fine. Then toss me on both the edge of the boat, and I'm fine with that, but I'm going to stay in my opinion. And then the junior high level, I think these study hours, these study periods,
yeah,
this lunchtime,
you.
It's still open for me because, I mean, Erica, I forgot the example you talked about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is what our children do today. I mean, they read on phones. I mean, they read on their Kindle. I can't fathom being a board member taking that away from them. I'm sorry. That's how they're trained to do in our society. I am not going to be the one that says, don't read that book on your Kindle. I'm not going to.
So let's have that conversation, because that seems like a really purposeful conversation around that period of time, because I think Joe brings up a good point. Is lunchtime an open time for technology? Joe asked me to look at a number of districts, and it is interesting because I looked at the ones all around us, 200, 203, 89, 93, and their policies are pretty much across the board. They're very different than the ones that we're looking at here right now. Basically, they say, you know what, you can bring them, but they can't be on throughout the day. However, there is discretion for building principals and a teacher. Across the board, there's a lot of latitude. You can't have it unless the buildings do it a little bit differently. Even 93 talks about that. Students may possess cell phones on school property, may use them only before or after school. During the school day, cell phones must be turned off, but you can get written permission to have that.
And you know what, that's, Paul, when I think back
so
to
it's all
policy,
over the place.
That was really first-generation policy in schools for cell phone use. Because it was a slow crawl, then the scope creep, and then all of a sudden, boom, off the doors. And that's where you're seeing, you know, elementary, you know, students having, you know, phones as well. And it's, who buys the phone for the child? It's not the school district. So it's, you know, that kind of first-generation set of policies, which was, look, okay, we know that some kids have them, they can keep them, you need to keep them in your backpack, you need to keep them in your locker, right? And then they indemnify themselves by saying, but we're not responsible if there's theft. And then, and to Angel's point, I brought Carl's Castle Keys, which is their, you know, student handbook like we have in our schools. And they do make this very user-friendly for the kids.
Mm-hmm. In the handbooks.
In the handbooks.
That's where they're all a little bit different.
I mean, we have to do that, and, you know, we will do that. But it's, you know, it is broader than that. And this issue, like others that this board and others have faced, as it becomes more widespread, how do you encourage the appropriate use of it? identify what's not appropriate, and then hold, you know, how do you write those procedures to hold responsibilities? Technology is a great tool. Every news clipping you send to us, probably 80% out of the 100% are about the widespread use of technology in schools. It's not going to change or go
away. It's not going away.
So how do we, you know...
So do we open up access at certain points in the day? What does the board feel about that? Is that something that the policy committee should be looking at? I've heard from Joe.
I've heard from
John a little bit on that.
Specifically at middle school.
Yeah, I'm talking middle school only. But yeah. I want to be able to set a procedure that the board is very comfortable with. So I'd like to hear from, I think the policy committee needs to hear from the rest of the board on, are there open times that would allow for lunchroom? For, again, we're talking junior high only. That's what Joe brought up.
Can I frame your question this way?
Please.
I don't really think we've touched squarely enough on some of the complaints that we've heard from parents about their students being exposed to pornography. Let me just use that as a big, broad term, things the parents don't want their students to see. Do we feel, as a board, or do you want the policy committee to take into account that that's really a parent's responsibility to teach that child what they should or shouldn't be looking at? And it's our role as a board to allow the technology for educational purposes. I mean, I think the thing that's really got us all backed into a corner right now is if we have some students who are going to use the technology to go out to some, you know, explicit website. And that's why we try to write such a specific policy that wouldn't let a student do that. Where's the board here? I mean, I don't hear anyone at all saying, well, we've got to make this strict enough that nobody's going to get to pornography on it. Do we need to make it that strict, or do we have procedures that can be the teeth behind it, and do we have parents who buy the phones and teach their children how to use them at home and at school?
Mm-hmm. Well, it goes back... I think it goes to whether or not we... For me, it's what our long-range plan has done to position the district in terms of technology so that there's not a need, unless there's a specific educational benefit for that child, to have something other than a district-provided tool. I mean, and maybe in some ways that's why, and it was also for parity, that the high school has moved now, that they provide the tool because it's all encapsulated within their... You know, they're in charge of it, period. So they could have, like some other high schools I looked at in junior high, say, you can bring your own device, we're going to check it, blah, 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 but everybody can have whatever they want to use. It's cheaper that way, certainly.
So what I hear then is a kid at lunch would bring this and read at lunchtime based off of what you're saying, that there's really no need for Joe, junior high kid, to bring his cell phone to read because I could use my Chromebook. And this is
right,
what it
I think
is.
Our procedure can accommodate for individual student needs that are required for learning.
But I don't think what Joe's saying is he's looking for individual student needs. He's saying kids today read their phones. I mean, I do all the time at lunch. You know, I'm reading my phone. Is that something the board wants us to look at or not?
To answer.
Catherine's question. I think we've got to look at it from that global view.
I look at it. You asked a question, and I'm not going to answer it. But I'm going to answer.
You're going to go into law.
I'm going to answer it in the way of monitoring. I mean, once you say that they can only carry this around, when you're walking around, my daughter, son, walking around with that phone, okay, are they going to get disciplined? No, okay, you got it. Remember to use your Chrome. That's going to happen 1,000 times in half a school year. And then that 1,001, when a kid goes on a Klan website and showing other kids, hey, this is what they used to do to other people, well, why did they have that website? Well, you know what? 1,000 other times, no one said anything.
So that's why I'm saying I'm answering your question differently.
You are, no, you are.
To Joe's point.
But you can do that on your Chrome.
You can do well, you're on your internet filters. What I'm saying is you can set that up, but you're going to have hard times in terms of monitoring that and disciplining that because it's a slippery slope. Go put it away. Go put it away. Go put it away. Go put it away. Students are going to hear that 1,000 times throughout the year, and it's always just going to roll off their back. That's what I'm saying.
But it is.
This is a discipline and a description question. This isn't a technology question.
I think it's both. I do think it's a technology question in the sense of if they're on our network, it's easier for us to control it if they use our devices. And there is a technology responsibility to ensure that no one gets
I'm not disagreeing with that. There are Chromebooks in our own Wi-Fi site. So we can protect that.
To answer your question, there's, from a technology perspective, it's our responsibility to make sure people don't get out there and see things that are inappropriate, whether it's, you know, the pornography or anything else, just like we wouldn't give them a book that's inappropriate or
whatever. Go to that point, though. Because now we're saying read on your Chromebook or read a book or don't bring a book that's offensive to somebody next to me. So I'm lost because the book comes in, we're okay with it, because I'm guessing we shouldn't be, because it could be offensive. Therefore, you shouldn't bring that book in. Because a website...
book that was brought from home.
From home. You can't have books that come from home. I mean, that should be the policy. I mean, that's the rationale I just followed, and I don't see that. I mean, I don't think you'd want to do that. So this is their time to be social or do what they want, and we're taking the social tool of their generation away from them because people have bad behavior. Well, two people, it sounds like, have bad behavior. We have 3,600 students. We need to educate these students on the correct behavior. This is the well-roundedness that we're in need of our students. So we need to use this as an education time, not as restrict them and go to your room. I don't see that as how you teach children, the next generation. Marissa?
I don't know statistics. Okay, just anecdotal. Kids using their phone probably would think about using it less for educational purposes unless they're directed by their teacher to say, go on Spanish Dictionary, look up this word, what's the conjugation? Boom, they do that. I think it's more about them, to your point, Joe, having it available for check in with mom or dad, which is much more common. I mean, I call it the tethered generation, much more common than it was when I was raising my kids, or when they were younger at least. And this constant, you know, need to be connected. I think that's more of what I'm saying is that if we're looking at technology from an educational standpoint, then we have the devices to allow for them to create the appropriate use of technology in the classroom. I don't necessarily see a child during school hours, and even in the Castle Keys under electronic devices, it says cell phones will be turned off between the hours of blank and blank, 7:35 and 2:35, 2:55.
But not in the study hall, though. You just said they could listen to music.
It depends on the study hall teacher.
Okay.
Right, so it's again, it's up to
it's
the teacher.
What Paul said,
but
the
I'm saying that a cell phone is seen as this is a social tool. I would say maybe 9 times out of 10.
I
hear what you're saying.
Age appropriate matters, though. This goes to what you're saying, to what other people have said. We have to use comparative data here from like districts, and it goes back. I mean, it's amazing this perks conversation, how much it goes right to it. It is age appropriate, you know.
Well, that's what I'm saying for our junior high. We're trying to prep them so that they are. I mean, all kids teaching, all kids learning, all of us, you know, coming to grips with the changing culture and nature of this. At the same time, recognizing kids are at different places. A 13-year-old in one classroom is more mature than a 13-year-old in another classroom, right? Teachers are always accommodating for those things as well. So that to me is the work that I think we have to look at as us doing some homework for you, but also for you guys, to say what might be those differences. Because it's both ends, Patrick. I think it is technology, and that's where it started, but I think it's also what's the correct use of the tool and why.
Yes,
why are we doing it? And what constitutes a disruption in the learning environment?
Even if you go back to the perks thing, I think there were more restrictions in K through 5 in terms of these libraries than there was in middle school.
So procedurally. Right. Not policy-wise, procedurally.
So, anyway.
Well, it sounds like we need
as I was answering the question, I think from a technology perspective, we do have that responsibility to your question.
But we've taken steps to address that through all the work that Mike's doing.
We are starting to take efforts, and then I do believe that there's a policy that needs to address it as well as a technology piece to it. I think someone used an analogy that you can't stop drugs from coming to the school. People are going to bring them and use them, but there is a policy and there's a punishment for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And there's an education for that. And it's the same thing with inappropriate behavior. It includes bullying, right? And we have bullying that happens with the technology. There's more than pornography that this technology...
But that goes exactly to my point. Let's not define the tool. Let's define the behavior. Yeah.
And that's the policy, the behavior. And there's a lot of that in here. I mean, there is bullying that's described in here.
So I can write a procedure. I apologize, but eventually we're going to have to get back to this. I think Joe brings up some good points around... What does the board want this on the bus?
Trying to nail a tree.
I just want to make sure that I can write a procedure.
Well, I know the one I want you to write.
Yeah, but do other board members want us to, as a policy committee, to spend time on the transportation piece? Because
I think it's untenable. It's a red herring, and when
so you would say it would be more open.
What my concern would be, we've had incidents in the past where bus drivers have had to stop the bus because kids have been standing up, talking, yelling, fighting, all those kind of things. They already have the security of the children is first and foremost, and our kids go through a lot of bus training. Even walkers have to do the bus training, or at least they did when my kids were in there, in case they ever take a bus, right? Yeah. So I just think it's a red herring. I worry that we are going to set the district up for being held accountable when we're not physically on a bus with them, unless we start to pay teachers to ride buses or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's a piece of this. And that, to me, this is parent-driven piece, is to say, here's where it stops, and this is where we're going to do all these things. We're going to look at why we have technology, all those pieces. And as your child gets on the bus, part of their responsibility as being a privilege of using the bus, right, is this piece. Because we know that there's a bleed out of school for this, and we get that. So what's the educational piece about that for our parents and for the children, and that the kids understand that as well?
Other board members on that to give us direction? I've heard two really strong that said, that seems like a slippery slope once you're on a bus.
I would have to agree with that. I think the policy should be educational time, bell to bell, or whatever we call it. Maybe I'm not on the emails, but I don't know if there's been a clamor to say this protection should also include bus rides and field trips.
Well, it's certainly an improvement.
Well, to go better to me is
but we do have policy around bus.
We do
behavior as well.
Mm-hmm. So don't we have some dictated policy where we need to be able to provide on a bus? There's some state laws or federal laws that we have to.
I mean, it's not like we don't have policy.
We have to look at some of that. We can't just change
technology.
Enforcing it is harder. Mm-hmm. Right? You should hear the vocabulary on the buses. Certainly not vocabulary we would approve of.
No,
it's against policy.
On your procedures, Paul, I like the.
It's a good point. It is a good point.
Sorry, on your procedures, just one thing for me, because I don't have a teenager. I don't have something. What do the teachers say? I mean, because I know what I hear people tell me, or teachers I know that are not necessarily this district, but teach in junior highs, what they see, or coach here or there, and what they see on their. In their classroom, they're in their study hall, and they're in their school after-school activities, which I think there's wide usages for very good reasons of all these. But I think that's what we see. But I'd like to hear what Hadley teachers
said. I think it's a great question. A couple Hadley teachers stopped me at the training a week ago, and were really frustrated with where we were going. And just saying, you're going to take these e-readers out of kids' hands. They are bringing e-readers to school. You know, and I said, you know, we're able to log on to our Chromebooks and be able to get the app there, and the kids will be able to read it. They're like, they bring the reader. They have all their books loaded on there. It's ready to go. They click, and you're going to take that out of their hands. I had four teachers, all at Hadley, who were really frustrated with that because they're like, basically echoing what you just said. These are digital native kids. This is their world. This is what they do on a daily basis, and you're taking this piece away from. And it occurs in some classrooms, just like in other districts. It occurs in some classes this way and in some that way. What I am saying is, once we have a policy, we are going to have it consistently applied across. So that's why this conversation, and I appreciate you pushing further for this conversation, is that I want to implement whatever policy you guys come up with, and it's going to be implemented consistently, and we're not going to have somebody gets to do this and somebody gets to do that. Yeah.
That's when
I'm back in here.
And you were upset about that to begin with.
I was.
And I have full confidence that won't happen
again. That won't happen again. No.
That's why I'm suggesting when we look at a 6-8 model and kids are getting ready to use technology at another level, that's the accommodation that we have to make.
Well,
we
okay,
to
so,
think about
that. So we've got
not,
that.
We're not, we're not,
we got
you know, the interesting thing about the e-reader, because we talked about it, I think, today or yesterday or whatever, but, you know, I could see the ones where they don't connect to the internet, but at the end of the day, we're not taking reading away from them if they can't use their e-reader. They can get a book and read. I mean, we're not taking it away from them. We're taking away a part of their lifestyle and, you know,
well, it's a medium.
The coolness and the, you know.
I don't think it's
I don't think it's about cool. I think it's a medium. It's their
medium. You're not taking away reading. They can read.
It's their medium, though. We're telling them. That's telling them to do it. Your speech, John, at graduation, I mean, I think you should go back to that.
Was that a great speech?
It was a great speech.
You had more props than Robin Williams.
I haven't seen some of that stuff since.
I mean, but the point
you're making the very point we're talking about.
Yeah, you're making, this you made the life. Point. I mean, that was, I mean, so please go back to your speech.
No,
I hope you put it on her iPhone.
No, don't twist the words here. I'm not advocating one way or another. I'm saying, you know, the concept is we're not taking away their ability to read. That's the concept. We're not taking that away.
But you're taking their ability. You're not taking my ability to read, because that's how I was trained to read. We're training our kids society's health, and we need to teach them behaviors so that they do it properly, so that they're not disruptive to everybody. That's what we have this opportunity to do, and I've said it now three times. We are teachers. The behavior teaching is important. Making well-rounded 21st century adults.
And where we started out, where you said you wanted some differentiation, I think that's what we need to do. We need to look at this. We need to differentiate. I understand where everybody's angst is with that now. And we'll take a look to see what's in there. But, you know, one of the reasons, I think it's in the beginning of this, that we look at these policies is that something happens and it makes us look at a policy. So that's what we're in the process of doing. This is all good conversation. I don't want to write anything or change anything until I get the community input. We get the community input, because I think that's really important. I want to hear what other people say. There could be some great gems out there.
But can that be moved direction. Up? Because the 30th, that's the first one, the 30th?
Just trying to work with 7 board members and schedules has been a huge challenge.
I mean,
because I need board members there to. I mean, just the last community was successful. It really works well when board members are there to help us sit and listen.
But John, if we have the 30th, moving up would be the 23rd, which is...
You know, I don't know. Every day counts here.
No, I know. So is there...
I can't.
We lost 4 days to rain.
I think it was 5.
I can move it up. It's just...
It sounds like that's what people want.
Is it 23rd?
Well, Catherine, you're gone next week.
Right. I mean, 23rd is doable for me. I'm 1 of 7.
No, I just picked the week earlier. That's why I just ran.
Right.
Is there anybody else out the 23rd? I'm probably the guy out the 23rd. Can I check my camera?
Not here.
On your phone.
Somebody.
I don't know.
We can handle that.
Yeah, we'll,
we can handle that offline. Yeah, we'll get our calendars out and look at this. We can do that. See if we can. Maybe that'll be something else.
That's a good point.
Maybe we move that up, and that'll help.
I think, actually, to tell you the truth, I think giving more options would be helpful, because we sit here wrestling with that. Our constituents are on vacation too, and the dates that we picked are kind of in 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
And we might want to separate them out a couple of weeks. So if someone's gone 1 week, they might be back a different week. So
keep those dates and maybe add to
another session. I'll do as many of these as I can.
Okay. As long as I can get three or four board members there each night.
If I'm in town, I will come to the meeting.
Okay.
So. No.
I'm not a, I hate policy, by the way, but I have a kick.
Really?
I think
you found a new law.
Construction. We are never letting you on the policy.
I like the budget and finance part of it. I like the budget and finance. That's what the board does.
I have
a question.
Odd way of showing your love for or your hatred.
Let's ask your question.
I have a question. It's on page 13. It's under what teachers can do, employees. They're prohibited from using technology to communicate with students for personal purposes.
Yes.
That's always...
Oh, that's just there. You can't
just there. And they're also prohibited from writing letters. Or they can write letters to kids during the summer and stuff, and thank you letters for thanks and all that. But they can do that, but they can't use an email to do the same thing that they do in...
You know, we grappled with this policy in another club, and actually what we said was that if they do communicate electronically, they need to copy the parents on it. And when they send a letter, they're actually sending it to the parents' house.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. They are sending it to the
parents. Sending it to the parents' house. And
the kids don't get the mail.
In the club we had, we did not allow the coaches to communicate only with the kids.
Right.
They had a copy of the parents on the communication.
I'm just asking. I mean, cause
and as you get older, it actually switches, because I coach high school hockey, and it's the opposite there. We don't want the parents involved.
Yeah.
We want the kids to have to text us if they're not going to be in practice.
And, well, I coach hockey. You know. I coach soccer girls, and we do want the parents communicated on all communications from the coaches.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Soccer and hockey, too.
Yeah. Right there is the difference.
Soccer is an activity. Hockey is a drill.
Well said. But I just asked the question because, I mean, we are in the 21st century, and these kids...
No, that was one of my gaps in that, is that we weren't copying parents.
I wrote that down in here, and we'll see if maybe we can...
Especially the email.
Maybe that allows for something there.
I didn't mean to drill that.
Nope.
I'll be sending more comments.
Please, don't anybody comment on this. Just everybody read this, because I think this is, you know, we talk about what these kids do. If you go to page 5, I think it is, the big learning problem for page 5 is going to be the last bullet. Under unacceptable use general, accessing or participating in any games without the express authorization of a supervisor for employees or teacher administrator for students, or using the district's electronic resources for more than incidental personal use. So, you know, we talk about what these kids do. What they do on these phones is they play games.
Right.
They play tons of games, and they all want to show each other their games. We used to bring Matchbox cars to school and hide them from the teachers and show kids. Now they do have, they got apps, and that's what they're doing. So that's going to be a big part of training in this, is that we have to be careful about that.
But a teacher can, in this, the teacher can allow them to do that.
Yes.
And that's, and you're going to see when teams or bands or whatever get on bus, the coach.
But the teacher can allow them to bring in Minecraft on a USB and put it on one of them. They can't do it.
And they should.
That's stealing this copyright.
I don't think there should be any device should be on the line. Anybody else want to bring something up, or we want to keep talking about this?
There's another policy.
Catherine and Dean.
Yeah.
And Paul.
And thank you, Catherine, though, for volunteering to being on the policy.
Thank you very much.
1 week after being here, so.
Drew, did you have anything that you didn't comment?
You're welcome. The innocence of
youth.
All right, guys, next one. 2110, qualifications, terms, and duties of board members.
There it is. There's your first reading. We need comments.
Added to.
Anybody have any comments on that one?
I think people got kicked off, so they're locking back in.
Reading it.
I'm getting another drink of water. That does not mean I'm going to be talking.
This is page, there's 3 of 3 pages, right?
Yes.
This one? Yes.
Yeah, I don't know that one. Turn it off, but I have to work right there. Oh, yes, I do. Lovely.
Right.
anybody?
All right, so what?
Oh, no, it's Port Emory.
Oh.
So 2110 has to do with qualifications, terms, and duties of board officers. This came up when we had the opening caused by Sam's resignation.
Right.
We took a look at this. This is our first reading of it. We've got some red lines in here, and we need to know what you guys think.
So is this the policy from IASB?
This is our current policy with red lines.
With red lines.
Okay. Red lines through it.
But it's reference to school code.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not IASB, though.
It's not ISB.
Got it.
But it is school. It's reference school code. Okay.
This is from our attorney, I guess, right?
Yes. And the reason we looked at this is that the last time, if you recall, when Sam was here, we were trying to decide if we were going to have a president or when we were going to have to do this president pro tem. And I think it made it all clearer and easier to say, no, John's president, let's get a vice president. Now we know what to do at a meeting, and it's not a special, we don't have to do a workaround.
Right.
So that's basically what this says, is if there's an opening in there, you have an election, you know, the board gets to pick their leaders, they put their leaders on and they move forward, which is what we just did.
Right. So part of the disconnect, or what was, is that the right word, was inconsistent, is that in the original we have two of the four officer positions with their vacancy being filled by a special board election. So that was our VP and our secretary. And then when I looked at well, 87, I always go to them.
Yeah.
And
that's what's consistent.
The ones that follow school code, mm-hmm. for instance, not at the IA, but ASB's yes. press one. They have that in there, but then they also added this piece in that aligned those two positions, special board elections, with the president's as well. So all three
that's
have
what
the potential to be right, and that's what you put in your picture.
2110, page 103. That's
right.
Exactly.
So for me, that was part of the inconsistency of it too.
Yep.
The other thing, and John, you brought this up, and I was thinking about this coming in tonight too. But at the time when Sam rolled off and you rolled in, the two of you had talked about whether or not it was clear that the VP position has to be filled. I might be using the wrong language, but should be filled, has to be filled, whatever it might be. And I think we need to make sure there's clarity on that too, because I think all three leadership positions are important, but
I don't want
that to be.
We do have that clarity.
Okay.
There. It says a vacancy in the vice presidency is filled by special board
election. Okay.
That's not the way I read it. That is IASB.
Well, that's on
that
this
if a
one.
President, if a vice president resigns, it is filled by special election, and if a secretary resigns, it is filled by special election.
Correct. Then that's what's on this one. But but this is aligned to the school code. It doesn't have school board, Illinois school board.
I think IASB would say that they are aligned. Sorry, does anybody else have any comments?
Oh, you can
go. No,
the IASB, I think, would say that they are aligned with the statute. Mm-hmm. I believe what we're reading is a law firm's interpretation of how they view the policy. And they have come up with a policy that, quite frankly, differs significantly from the IASB philosophy, and the philosophy of most school boards in terms of the adoption of a policy. To me, there is a difference.
So, but Illinois Association of School Boards has to align their policy. There's always legal references to Illinois school code.
Correct. They are aligned with school code and statute.
Right.
That's
okay. It's not like one is only using a reference point versus another one using the other reference point. So for me, I think what's important is that there's consistency for the three positions, and. I guess I'll speak to this because this is further back in terms of our conversation around board leadership, and that is, and actually, John, you brought this up when you asked whether or not, at the time, Drew had made a written statement about his interest in the position, that type of thing. And our language in our policy says they may write that, not should. And I'll own that amendment, because I brought that to the board, whatever, 3 or 4 years ago, about wanting there to be, as a board, more conversation around what is the role, what are these three roles, and what do they do, and what's important about it, and what are those, I mean, and it comes from other boards that I've served on, where you have a conversation around the role of the leadership and what they need to do. And so for me, part of wanting to serve in a leadership role, any of these three, you know, I suppose even a chairperson of one of our standing committees or identified committees, is intention, is, you know, wanting to make sure that we understand what it is we want to do in that role and what that role needs, et cetera. So the lack of continuity on this with those two was pressure tested when we had Sam leave, which we've not had before, at least not mine. I don't know, John, if you had that happen. We had a board member leave, but that person wasn't in a leadership role. So I'm more comfortable with this, because I think that it allows greater consistency for all three roles, and the ability, even though it says in our other policy, may write a statement, that is an important part of our conversation as board members and leaders, and that this board doesn't shackle moving forward other boards in terms of how they see leadership positions.
And so you're comfortable with the addition
of you know, vacancy in the presidency, and I think we know what vacancy means. We got an email prior to the board meeting about that, you know, is that they go away for a week. No, we know what vacancy means. You know, that person has to leave the board. And maybe that needs to be defined in here.
It would be resigns.
Or resigns, right, exactly. So we're not doing, it's not just ticky-tacky to me. Is it consistent, and does it allow a board to have conversation around, you know, leadership positions, and encourage people to put on the table what is it that, you know, we want to do and serve as, et cetera.
And for me, at the end of the day, this gives the board, future boards, the most flexibility to move forward. And at the end of the day, there's certain things the board wants to accomplish, and this gives them the ability to have those in those offices that they deem appropriate as a board. They act as a board to determine that. And every group should have that. In fact, we have a new member. She should be part of that decision, not you come on and you're not part of that decision. So this policy appears to have that. It'll be pressure tested down the road, and somebody will probably find a problem with it, and they'll be discussive. But at least you got it approved after something's been pressure tested, and I think this makes the improvement. By the way, I wasn't here, Drew, but you have my yes vote. Thank you.
Well, and I'll give a hypothetical, and that is, this didn't happen on this board, but it happened on another board I served on years ago. There's an individual who wanted to serve a leadership position. It happened to be the vice president position. And they submitted their letter of intent and their goals for the committee they oversaw and all that stuff. But they made it clear that should the president's position be vacated, they were not interested in serving in the role of president. I mean, and I suppose that's, in thinking about that from, this is 15, 20 years ago at least, but that is what came up 20 years ago now. And I thought that was very interesting, but that they were specifically said, I'm interested in this role for these reasons because I feel like I have the talent to do this piece.
Under the old policy, they would have just, if they were the vice president, they would have said, I'm not interested in being the president, and then the board could select someone. So,
right.
The old policy worked for that scenario, in my opinion. Mm-hmm.
Other
board members who chime in and give policy committee where we're going with this? You're good with it? I like that.
Well, that was the 10:25 I'm in.
You're comfortable with how the policy committee has written
not
this?
Not voting, is just giving consent.
Yeah.
So I'll comment.
Yeah, please.
I'm not. So what I heard sort of Erica and Joe say a little bit is, you know, gives the board this, gives the board this, gives the board this. And the way I look at this, having gone through it, right, is there, you know, typically you know, secession of leadership, there's a community perspective to it. And I think that the way the policy writes is written today, and I talked to the general counsel at the IASB about this, they purposely have that the secretary and the vice president are reelected if they resign. But from a president perspective, they look at it in terms of consistency, what you look in the financial markets, certainty on what's happening. And they felt that the vice president moving into the president role was appropriate for largely those reasons of community knowing what's going on. There's no uncertainty, and it eliminates the politics that we all experienced with the uncertainty about how we would move forward. And a couple examples are actually there are situations, and this is why they've written it this way, but there are situations where some school districts can't fill the vacancy, or nobody wants it, or there are school districts where I think in our last three elections, we've had one contested by like one person, right? And so the issue that they're trying to protect is if you get to a point where you can't fill a vacancy and you get a 3-3 situation, and there's fighting among the board, and it's 3-3, and you can't come to a decision. So that's one of the reasons that they, put the policy the way it is. The other one is that if you have boards that are more split, some political gamesmanship can come into place where you're filling a vacancy and you're saying, okay, we were 4-3, we're now 3-3, let's go get, let's all decide on who we want on board so that we can now be the 4-3 as opposed to the, the minority thing. So there's a lot.
John, are you talking about when there's a vacancy, like the interviews
right,
that we did?
Right. So there could have been some gamesmanship. Some board members could have gotten together and say, "Hey, let's pick this person because they're against portables or whatever." Right. I mean, there's some political stuff that
can
happen.
That can happen anyways.
Oh, right. Huh? That can happen.
This absent this policy, that could have happened.
I'm just telling you the rationale for them. Right. On they felt that. They felt pretty strong that...
I followed you up to that one, though. I'll say that. Because that one, if the president's named, then there still could be a 3-3 for a new member to come in, and the three...
There's just more ability.
That happens.
There's just more ability to do the politics.
So let's hear John's thought.
Yeah, and then, my perspective from the, Catherine comes in, she's like, okay, now... I got to vote for somebody. I think that's a little awkward.
That just happened to the four of us.
I do have to vote.
Yeah, but it happened.
It just happened to the four of us. We came on board, and the first thing we had to do at that first meeting.
Yeah,
was
that's
a
very different situation, right? You're on the campaign trail. You met us. You saw us in action. You talked, right?
We didn't have a campaign trail.
I mean, it's
there was no campaign.
Well, you
liked it though.
Everybody took one step back, and the four of us were left out in front.
There was 1,200 votes.
So John,
it was a different situation. So anyway, to me, I think. What the community wants and what you typically want with this is you want to understand what's going to happen, and you don't want to be sitting there dangling, figuring out what's going to happen. And certainly the politics that were played in the last one, to me, were, we put through people through things they didn't have to be put through. And I think the policy should exist the way it was. I do agree that you should elect a vice president if it's the vice president that rolls into it. But I don't think that we should have a reorganization of the board, based on that. Mm-hmm. And, the IASB, I just did my research into it. I mean, the policies are written. It's not just they have a general counsel, but they use other firms. They get their input. They get superintendent input, board members input, teachers inputs, community input. They've scrubbed this. And really the policy that is being recommended is really by, an attorney, a firm that just has a different interpretation not necessarily what's happening out there in the industry or the other school board. So.
Did you say district the 7 has?
87 uses this, and
yeah, they use the same term.
And
they use the same term.
Okay, so I appreciate that. I think going back to my interest 3 or 4 years ago to have board members be more transparent about interest in leadership positions is for exactly what you just described, and that was when any of us came on in a regular election, the immediate phone call you get is, let's talk about who's going to serve in board leadership roles. And that was, at a minimum for me as a new board member 7 years ago, daunting. And at the other end of it, it felt deceitful in terms of us having that conversation in public. And this board, by precedent, rolls over its leadership roles every 2 years. You know, in particular the president. I don't know if other positions have stayed on, not in my tenure, but part of the challenge of that for me in wanting to encourage the board through policy to have an open conversation and say, here's why this role is important, or here's what I want to do differently with vice president. I'd like to, you know, have this piece. Is exactly what you're talking about, John, because we don't do that as a board. What we do is we have in our general election a rollover that says, okay, now this person's up next and this is what we're going to do, and it's not a transparent conversation. So my sense of this is 9 times out of 10 it's going to do exactly what it says, which is that person in vice president role would willingly serve, and you know the board will say roll up, right? But it offers, at least for me, a way to look at how we've historically rolled up these roles, the role of president in particular, and say let's have that be more of an open conversation around what is it? It's a board conversation, and I understand your comment about community viewpoint. There's a viewpoint of the community in everything we touch, everything we say, everything we do, everything we don't do. That's always going to be there, and I know that. But my interest in this is opening this up for greater conversation, greater transparency. Not the latter. To do that.
One of the things I'm concerned
about. Well, that can easily be done following the policy that the ISB put in place, right? I mean, I could have filled a statement of interest why I would have or would not have wanted to be president in it. That's not stopped, right? What concerns me is the politics that happened.
It happened
during and as you know, that's not the fun part about being on the board, is all mm-hmm. that politics that goes on.
Right.
And having to reorganize always generates that. And that's why, in my opinion, you want to minimize that, because the people that are impacted, board members and their relationships, right? But also the community, because mm-hmm. the community wants to see stability. They don't, you know, they're not looking for the political aspects of this. That's
one thing on transparency I think is important, because as a new member, you know, the whole idea, we're not a new member anymore, I'm going to stop that.
You guys are done.
You know,
only Catherine can pull that one off.
Catherine, so you know, there's this unwritten policy that Erica just quoted that I didn't really know about, that I got on, which if you're the president like John is, you really can't be the president if John wins an election next time. And I just got to say, that's just so wrong. What you want to do is give yourself the opportunity to pick the best person for the times to lead you for what your goals are. And that's what this policy does. But absent of that, this whole non-written precedent thing about a president can't be a president again, to me...
I've met people who are presidents of boards for 10, 12...
And that gives continuity. That gives the community all this...
Yeah,
so
this
whole...
That's not a policy.
I know it's not a policy.
It's an unwritten one.
It's an unwritten one. That
it's what this board has...
Hold on, guys. That's not accurate. That's not unwritten. I mean, we've had someone that served as president 6 years or 8 years or something. I mean, that's not... That's not that's not
good. Good.
That's good to hear.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not. There's no policy that says.
Erica just said the precedent that this set, and that's what was told when I got on the board. The precedent was set. That's why we needed a new president. So I think talking about politics, I mean, that's partly what was, you know, kind of pushed over us when three new people got on the board. So I'm glad that's not part of the written policy, and I'm glad.
It's not. It's not under.
I know, and I'm glad that it's not.
And I'm glad that this policy gives even more flexibility than the last policy so that a board can put people in position that it deems appropriate at that time. Politics aside, you know, what you want to do is put the best person to go for it. But we can disagree on that. And
others? You're good with it?
Okay. So that comes back up August 11th.
11th.
Okay. Next discussion item, public participation in board meetings. So I put some slides together, guys, that I wanted to share with you. So Paul's walking out on this.
He's seen them?
No, I think he's going for a bio break.
No, he's seen them. This won't take long. But, you know, basically, the first president meeting I had with Paul, you know, I've always felt as a board that, you know, public engagement at board meetings was not as smooth as it could be. So I kind of highlighted on the next slide some of the current state public participation. This is the way I saw it. Very, you know, one way, right, public to the board. I thought it had a element of inconvenience where, you know, the public, they have to show up at 7:30. Sometimes maybe they have things doing and they can't, and then if they can't, they got to wait to the end of the meeting. So I felt it was a little inconvenient, or, you know, could be viewed as inconvenient from their perspective, and may actually stop them from coming, right? They may look at their watch and go, oh, shoot, I can't get there by 7:30, so, you know, I'm not going to wait till 10:37 to get involved. I felt that it created, the way we do it now, it creates a perception that board members are not responsive because, you know, we sit here, and I've told you guys before, sometimes I just feel like really stupid just sitting here and not saying anything. So, it creates that. I feel that the way it's set up, you know, at the beginning and the end, sometimes we have material to present that might help people with their public participation, rather than, you know, coming up front and saying things. And sometimes they hear rumors and they say things that maybe aren't there. I felt there's always been a pressure on time, and I'm not always sure there's clear closure when someone brings something up and how we handle it. So, again, these were my perspectives. On the bottom, it should read here, you know, this is not board policy. This is just an initial draft for discussion purposes. I don't know why that didn't come across. But the next slide, you know, in conversation with Paul, I said, you know, I'd like to see if we can change public participation to be a little more two-way communication. I guess I should have put a little more two-way. I'd like to see us be able to respond where possible, take a more proactive stance on documenting action items, on points that people bring up, looking to provide some more flexibility in public participation, allow the public to be more informed during public participation. That you'll understand what that means later when I show the framework. And then I just threw out some guiding principles for us. I mean, sometimes it's hard to answer a question when it's asked on the spot, right? You need to go do some research. But, you know, if we can, you know, I think we should, or we should, you know, we should try to. If we can't, we should commit to a response by the next board meeting unless we feel, you know, the request is too much or may decide it's, you know, something we don't want to respond to. You know, our public participation, it's not necessarily a decision-making time. So, again, I'm just trying to transparently communicate a little bit of what it is and what it isn't. And then we have to acknowledge we still have some time constraints due to completing, you know, business meetings and activities. I mean, that's just the reality of our meetings. So, you know, I kind of went out and I looked at, you know, some things that I've seen in public participation with the Park District, the Village Board, DuPage County, a couple others. And based on that, I kind of threw out the next slide, I think, which is an overall framework on how we could do public participation. And I'll go a little more into detail with it after these four bullets. But I was viewing as an initial public participation that would start at the beginning of the meeting. We would document action.
We do that now.
Yeah, and I'll explain a little more in detail, so just bear with me. I'll wrap this up in 5 minutes. Cover any action items from the previous public participation would be another part of the framework.
public comments after discussions and presentations followed by board discussion. So that's another part of the framework. And then an end of meeting participation. Okay.
So three. Or three potential possibilities.
Three times to do it, and they're each a little different than what we do today, except for the last one. So the first one, the initial public participation, would go as follows. Next slide. Basically, it would be, you know, board president says, okay, you know, today we're going to discuss, we're going to discuss the budget, the chillers, construction, and, you know, board policy on technology and duties. So basically saying, those are the agendas, the item, we're going to talk about it. Is there any other thing that's not in the agenda that people can speak about? Which is a little bit our vernacular today, but it's really limiting the idea that let's get public to participate on things we're not going to talk about, because later we're going to give them an opportunity to participate on things we are going to talk about. So the idea here is it's really about non-agenda items. We put a time limit on it, 30 minutes. We say, let's have 30 minutes of that time. We use it, we don't use it. It can be extended if we feel, you know, there's going to be, usually we know if people are coming in and there's some things they want to talk about. So it could be extended, give each individual 3 to 5 minutes to address the board. And then during this time, and I think this would help the administration too, if they ask a question and we can answer it, let's just do that. So we kind of check it off our list and it's done and we move forward. And it's done publicly so that people know we did respond to it. And if we can't, we assign it for follow-up. And we take a more proactive approach that, you know, I could summarize and say, here are the questions. We could agree on who's going to take it. And we cover it in the next meeting. So, again, it's done publicly. It's not done where Paul has to meet with someone, have a conversation, and then they come back and say something, and Paul says, well, I answered that or I didn't answer it. I mean, it's done publicly, and it's transparent to everybody. So rule would be we try to follow up by the next board meeting unless we say otherwise. And I think the board can take a role here in saying, look, you know, this is not something that we think is a priority right now or we need to commit time to. And maybe give Paul some of that direction, too, so he's just not chasing every little thing that happens. And the idea here, especially for people in the public, it's not to say we don't want public participation. It's just to at least to encourage it and put a framework around it that has a little more flexibility to it. So next slide is what I'm calling the action items from the previous public participation. So today, for example, we had a few questions. We would have documented those, we would have set it back out, we would have assigned it to people, and then the next meeting during the initial public participation, we would report back to these so that we would get answers. It's in public, it's transparent. Next slide, as I only have 3 minutes left. What we would do is after we present or we have a discussion item, we just turn to the public and say, would anybody like to comment on what they just heard? And we're getting input, right? So this is comment. This isn't, you know, we're going to provide an answer to something, but the public hears a presentation that we give. It's fresh in their mind. They can comment on it, right, rather than wait till the end of the meeting where they maybe have forgotten things the way I always do. It allows them to look at an agenda and say, okay, you know, I don't have to be there at 7:30. I could probably arrive at 10:44. You know, so it gives them a little more flexibility to come in and out. We would limit the comments to 10 minutes. And I just threw this out, guys, right? I would say, you know, we give a presentation, 5 to 10 people in the room, that's typically what we have, and they, you know, give them, whatever, 30 seconds to a minute, say, hey, comments on anything you heard, what's the most important message you want to give to us about what you heard? We capture that so it's a part of our understanding. And then once that happens, once the public speaks, then we as a board go through our, you know, discussion. And then the final one would be the next slide, which is at the end of the meeting, similar to the way we do now, we just kind of, you know, close out any action items if possible and ask if anybody else wants to speak. And then the next slide just says other things. Oh, that didn't show up. The next slide was just other things that we probably need to talk about. Public engagement would be social media. You know, we've talked about potentially videotaping, getting Erica engaged in it. And that's really the idea. So essentially the concept is, if you go back to the future state thing, is to make it a little more flexible
get it a little more focused during the course of the agenda where it happens, and you know, hopefully being a little more receptive to people's comments and things like that. So that's the idea that I wanted to throw out there. And Paul and I talked about it. Erica got a preview of it today. Was it today or yesterday? Yesterday. And up for discussion among board members.
Can I go back to first public comment?
Initial public initial participation? Public.
Yeah. On agenda item. When I saw this one, I want to, what, how are we going, we as a board act as individual members until we make a decision, and then the decision is made, and then we move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying that when these non-agenda items are brought up, if they've been discussed or not discussed,
mm-hmm.
how do we prevent the disintegration of that board collegiality, if that's a word, of a decision has been made and now we move forward? How do we not rehash conversations that have already happened? Are you, is you, board president, going to be the lone responder to these public participation? Because if I don't if I disagree with you on an agenda item, and I hear, you know, a public bring something, I can go, told you, John, I told you this isn't a good idea,
right?
And we're going to rehash the entire thing all over.
So it clearly has to be facilitated properly. So an example today, we were asked by a member of the community, are there going to be any more Colorado trips? Right. So that to me, you know, Paul at that point can decide to say, we actually have another one planned, or, you know, we're not certain, we're thinking about it, there could be another one. That to me is one where we could have provided an answer, kind of check that off, respond to the community member, do it today, do it now, get it over with.
But Paul works for us. So I see you as, I see you or that chair as the people that answer this. Because if it's a non-agenda item or something that's already been discussed, that decision has already been made and we are moving forward. Now, if you, in those discussions, feel that, okay, I need to bring it back to the board and we need to have a discussion, it'll be an agenda item, and then we go through the three-step process, that's fine. But I don't want to get back into a rehash process because we're always going to be taking steps.
I agree with you.
Paul works for the board. Mm-hmm. You're our leader for the board. Mm-hmm. If there's Colorado trips, you should already know that. And you should say, or you don't know that, and you say, I'll get back to you, or I don't have the answer, and
absolutely.
I'll follow up next time.
Absolutely.
So that's where I feel a little uncomfortable with that. Mm-hmm. I'm not uncomfortable with it. If
well,
we go to this idea, I'm all for public participation, but we need to have the board's voice as one voice, and I don't know how the other board members feel, like if they want to chime in to, you know, no, if the public, I want to be able to talk about it too.
Yeah, and I might say in this situation to Paul, I say, you know, do you want to, you know, do you need to talk to us about trips or not, or, you know, are you comfortable answering us now? I mean, it obviously, there'll be some trial and error, but the point is not for me to speak on the behalf of the entire board. It's to say, is that something we can knock off and get an answer to for somebody who came to the meeting, you know, and try to answer it as soon as we can so that they don't have to either, you know, email Paul to get an answer or meet with him to get an answer. I'm just trying to take those things off the table. And you're right, that's going to require some, you know, je ne sais quoi, and, if it's a decision we haven't made, and the answer would be it's a decision we haven't made and we need to get back to you. And I'm sure I'll make mistakes, and you guys say, wait a minute, we haven't made a decision. I'll say, okay, wait a minute. I'll say something funny, maybe, and say, we didn't make a decision. Mm-hmm.
I like it. I mean, I said it on John's president meeting yesterday, so I had a little bit of a heads up on this, as he said. And, you know, it's a balance of knowing that this is a business meeting and we typically are at, I mean, this is a special meeting. We weren't even supposed to meet in July, but here we are. But so it's a balance of being able to do the work, which means we got to be on our game, do our homework, get to questions, make sure we've, you know, done our reading and all that. And it's I didn't think about that, and I think that that's a great point. I like the idea. There was one when I left yesterday. I thought, so what are the boards doing, right? So we did a little search. There's a board up in Minneapolis, actually, and they talk about what something you had brought up, John, which was addressing issues not on the agenda. And one way they do it is an open forum. So before the meeting is called to order, members may sign up to speak during the, they call it an open forum period. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of your idea around that, you know, 30-minute time. So, you know, I like that. I think many years ago, maybe it was your first year on the board piloted a...
come 15 minutes early.
Yeah, 15 minutes early, like talk time. And each board member would rotate being here 15 minutes earlier than the regular time so that if people wanted to speak individually, they could do that. I think it went away because people didn't come. So, you know, so sometimes we need it, sometimes we don't. So I like that, and I think the only thing to put on the table to think about is when you have a member of the public who disagrees with a decision, whatever that might be, that if that perseverates, it comes back and back and back and back, that's the decision. The superintendent has a decision to make that. That's the direction we're going in academically or curriculum-wise or budget-wise or whatever. I don't know that you can control that, but just to be able to respond maybe, you know, to that, John, to say, we appreciate the fact that you disagree with that decision. We appreciate that. Thank you for your comment. I don't know that we can do more with that.
Well, in which case, I think we would, you know, we would say, you know, we've answered that question. It's not the answer you want, but it is, and we all agree to that, and we're going to move on. But it's done publicly. It's not done, you know, he's sitting in an office talking to someone, and then it comes back out, and then, you know.
Right. I mean, that individual, all like any of us, we would always have the right to, you know, make an appointment to write the board president or anybody else and say, can we meet for coffee or whatever. So those things will still happen.
So this is just, guys, this is like a draft framework thing, and you know, that I hope you guys look at and think about and say, let's do this, let's change this. I mean, I'm open to it. But
regarding looking at it, can you send it to us? Because it wasn't, I don't know if it was supposed to be, but we didn't get this on the board.
No, you didn't.
Okay. And it helps, obviously, to have a pre-meeting, like all the stuff. So appreciate that. And if you could send it to us, then we can give you some more feedback on digesting it. My quick feedback is when you're trying to increase communication with the public, I think it's a great thing. I think we should try new things. I think the listening tours are something we're trying, and there's a little bit what you just said kind of in that. So great that we're doing it. Great we're doing it again. Great that you want to change things. I want to be aware of two things when we change, because I'm a guy who likes to change. One is keep evaluating it, right, because there's probably a better way to do it after you start doing it. And so let's review it. Let's talk as a team and come up with something that makes sense. I like your ideas, John. Thanks for that. And I think the key thing is you got to be careful, though. One thing, Sam approached it very differently. He, not 100%, but tried not to comment. You know, and one thing that happens when you do get in this engagement, sometimes and not other times, there could be a discrimination felt by one public speaker versus another. I got the good answer. I got a full answer. I got an answer from Patrick and John. I got one, you know, I didn't get an answer. And that field does happen. And I've seen it happen with this board at times. And I think that's something we really have to guard against. Having been a member of that audience for whatever 4 or 5 months that we were, you can see things as an audience member much different than you can.
And that's a part of what drove this for me, Joe, is that, you know, two things I think happen. I think as a board we're guilty of sometimes responding when the perception in the audience is that it's good for us to respond. But we, right, you know, like we're silent 90% of the time, but someone says something and someone says something good and we're like, oh yeah, right. So then everyone else is like, oh okay, so great, they respond to that, right?
Yeah, I agree.
And I think the other thing we don't do is, you know, I mean, I talked to Paul, you know, I'd I'm fine putting a flip chart up there and, you know, capturing the action items and putting them up or whatever. You know, we don't have to go that extreme. But people seeing that we are capturing these things, but then we respond back in a
photo. I like that diagram. Yeah. Actually, you have a smart person.
Well, that's what I said.
I mean, I like it.
We've done that before where, you
know. I'm all for that because it's the visual is important. You know, it really is. The fact that people are commenting, I mean, it can be redundant after a while and you want to be careful. And your time frames, that's the one thing as I think about this, your time frames have a discriminatory nature too. When there's a hot topic, you're going to have to limit it.
Right.
So who's going to get the time to talk? You saw that when the think tank stuff was happening, right. And was kind of monitoring it by saying if somebody's already repeated it, then
you have that up there too.
And a couple of points.
But it's problematic when you're doing that anyway.
You know, a couple points. I tried to put some stakes in the ground, right? So, and I definitely want the public to understand, right? You limit it to 30 minutes. You know, we have the ability to say, you know, hey, we know we're going to talk about this today, so we can extend it. I'm just trying to put stakes in there. Right? Yeah, same thing with the 10 minutes after a discussion, right? What I am trying to, and what I think we need to manage as a board with the community is, you know, don't get up and say the same thing over and over again. Like, we get it, we're capturing it, they see it.
And that's why putting it on the
board. Right,
and
that's why putting it on the board is important. They see it. And it's not like the next person gets up and says the exact same thing. It's like, okay, please, we want you to speak. We want your input. But is there another angle that we're missing that we want from you guys?
I think the other important thing, though, most boards, 99% of the boards, be it a village board or school boards, don't do it this way. They do it the traditional way that we were doing it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've spoken to many village board meetings. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. You don't get the feedback unless you're a presenter. That's the only time.
Yeah.
You're a petitioner.
I'm guessing you're right. And what I try to do is look at what other boards are doing, other government agencies, and just try to incorporate what I thought were friendlier practices.
And I'm not saying that it's good to be different. Don't get me wrong. That's good. And it's good for the audience to recognize that, hey, we're trying to communicate more, and we're going to do it so much so more that we're changing from what normal policy is. And that's 95% of the boards that are going.
And I don't hear any of this just taking away from what we know we're here to do, which is to run a business here. And that's part of it.
Yeah.
It's making sure that when there is commentary and response that we manage that because of what you suggested and just from a timing standpoint. But I like the idea of capturing those thoughts, you know, and have those be kind of cascaded so that folks see that, you know, we have that information. We're not always, you know, but we're not always going to agree. So if the thought process in the public is, the more I say this, the more it'll change their mind, that's not what I think you're trying to do. It's to say, we get it. We don't need to have it repeated. We're as appropriate. We need to get back.
We're just trying to get new, you know, more information.
Yeah.
Do you have anything you want to add to it? Because I think we got a few board members who have not had a voice yet. So
I think getting the report is an excellent idea. And you don't want the people who are watching the meeting to feel like they're shut out from the discussion. I'm very uncomfortable with someone speaking with finality to answer a question on the spot, and I look at the questions that were asked tonight, and I made a note of them because I thought, you know, we should respond.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are you going to say about the assistant principal situation? What are you going to say about salary for the PR person? I almost think it would be better to invite those kinds of comments ahead of time so you can prepare an answer, and then we aren't in a situation where on the spot someone is speaking.
Yeah. And
that way people still feel invited.
I agree. That was part of the framework, is that, you know, that you, if you want, you know, to send your question, but we still may not answer it that day. We may answer it the next board meeting.
Right.
We have the flexibility to answer the next board meeting. But we've been at, and, you know, we've been asked some of these questions 5 times, right? So obviously the process we're using isn't working, right? We need to close it in public session.
Right. Well, closure, I think, is an or that
individual
doesn't agree with the answer.
Well, that could be too.
You know, where?
Yeah.
No,
So you're done.
I'm not suggesting it's done. I'm saying
so there's public participation.
Right.
This is we're going to blow here.
I'm not on the board, and I've been here till 11, and I've heard you guys.
So the presentation ideas are good. So
you want us
to
wrap it up?
Flush it out.
Well, I'd like to get
Drew, I don't know what your thoughts are on the deck.
We're trying to get transparent.
I'm sorry. So many conversations go on.
He asked you if you had any thoughts on the deck.
Who asked that?
Patrick asked you if you had any thoughts on this.
Oh, you know, John, I like the it in theory. I like the action item concept because it you're right. It does close the loop, and it does make things more accountable. So it was discussed. At a certain point, it was. And this is our record in this. So no, I think it's this is an ongoing process, and however we can better communicate with the community, I'm certainly in favor.
Okay. So next.
Want some feedback?
Next
I think
steps.
He is still trying to jump in here. So
oh, I'm sorry.
Just respectfully waiting.
You might be waiting for a while.
I like the idea of being able to talk to the public. I think that we started doing that. When we first came on board, we didn't. And I think that over time, we've started to ask questions. I think a lot of times our participation should be asking clarifying questions, make sure we understand what their comments are, maybe delve a little more to see if there's something more to it that we should understand. I would echo what Catherine said about being very careful about we don't want to speak for the board. You know, none of us get to do that. We have to vote on things to be able to speak. There are times, though, clearly, when you can answer pretty simple. Mm-hmm. You know, that there's something that is just pretty simple and you can answer the question. To that, though, you know, one of the reasons is we like to be prepared and we like to be able to go through things before we answer them. And I would ask that in my entire time on the board, I've never seen a presentation show up at the meeting that wasn't in my board book that I spent hours going over ahead of time. So if we're going to do more of this, I'd like to get this the day before so that when I'm asked these questions, I can maybe answer them and not waste people's time by kind of, you know, trying to go, can you go back and forth? We could have read this if it was included in our packet. It wasn't, so I prefer that we stick with that part of the board policy, which is put the stuff in the packet that we're going to talk about at a meeting.
Yep. That's always the goal, and when it doesn't happen, we just got to man up and, you know.
I'm manned up, but you're just going to email it to us.
Yeah, I'd like to see this so I can read it.
Man up and email it to us.
You got it.
We'll woman right. up and email to everybody.
That's an interesting choice of words.
Woman up.
All right, any other questions?
Thank you. No, that's good.
Okay, public participation. Anyone would like to
speak? I'm just going to go through and kind of provide to a number of different things that came up. I like the public comment proposal. I think that's very good. In Winfield, we had changed our meetings, and we did try to do some of that before, and then also the committee to hold, and also have different topics, and that is nice for people to be able to interject. You know, Joe, I just wanted to comment on kind of where that was going with the dialogue with Paul about the incidents and what has actually happened. I get extremely, given all that I know about incidences and the things that happened at the schools and talking with other parents, it actually gets me very heated when people continue to repeat the fact that this was isolated and it only happened with one or two kids. I mean, just the one incident, and there have been a lot of different incidences, many of which were not reported, but just one of the instances that was reported was actually kids recruiting other kids. I mean, you're talking, there were a number of kids that were exposed to this stuff. They were actively recruited to participate in pornography and engage in this stuff both at home and at school. And so kids were learning terms that they did not know about, and they were searching those then at school. And then, you know, there were a number of kids involved in this, and a lot of them that were involved that were doing it just at home did not get in trouble. because there weren't really grounds in the school that after us in that direction. So I'm just saying this is a very large issue, and it really does get heated when it gets marginalized, because there are so many parents that have never said anything, because number one, it was about, like, their kid came home and told them it was about another kid, so they didn't, it's kind of like a hearsay thing, so they didn't report it. And then the situations where it was their kid and they took care of it themselves. And I expressed that to my through the proper channels, and that has not been vetted. And parents that told me stories that were extremely disturbing, and I've shared those parents have not been contacted to verify, and they've said that they were willing to, and the district logs have been lost, and so there has not been adequate vetting through the district. So could you say I'm a little frustrated by that? Absolutely. Research has been done in Europe that shows that kids are uncomfortable when they're exposed to this stuff, and inappropriate material is often not reported, especially to teachers. Mothers are actually the ones that are the most likely to be told, 58% versus 18% for a teacher if something like this happens. And we've had a culture in this school that has been disruptive, and kids were gaming and they knew they could do it. Kids have been vlogging, video. I had a mother tell me her son came home and said they spent 2 hours watching the Blackhawks game in class. There is a very inappropriate culture, use of technology going on in the school. So this is not just about pornography. This is about how we're using these tools. And we need to keep that broader picture in mind, because when kids think they're not being watched, it just goes to on the end. Some students have been using their devices for certain class issues, certain class needs. My son does go over, he's over here at Forest Glen, he goes over to Hadley, and we never shun him with a device. He does not have a device that he can just take on his own, but when he goes and meets with the band director, he's been asked to use an iPad for his music. So when we drop him off specifically to meet with Mr. D, he brings his iPad, uses his iPad with Mr. D, he comes home, and then it falls under our house rule. In situations like that, maybe there are technology device passes for certain cases. I don't know. Inappropriate needs need to be defined a little bit more. What is inappropriate? Everybody has a different definition of that. Clarify the difference between the difference between first graders and eighth graders. A first grader is just learning. I would never give my first grader the phone and just let them randomly go do whatever. They need to, it's like dropping your kid off at the park and they decide that Johnny's been on the swing too long, so they shove him off and, you know, they start wrestling. You have to train these kids how to use these things. These are really sophisticated tools and they need that long-term training. And
I'm just going to ask you to summarize a little bit.
Okay, sorry. Once by eighth grade, then they will have done that. A Swiss Army knife has clippers in it, but it also has a knife. And so it may have an e-reader, but it also has the ability to put pornography. It's not appropriate. They won't let you on a plane with an Army knife. Kids are getting felony charges for poor choices of technology. This is not like magazines of yesteryear. And we need to protect them from this stuff. This is like comparing a bow and arrow to a semi-automatic gun. One shot versus it spraying all over the place. And there are a number of different things I will bring up when I come to the meeting with a specific policy. But, kids need to be in a culture where they're brought up and they know what to be using. And that's why I keep harping on the whitelisting. And I, as a parent, and I will let you know, I will be a bee in the bonnet. I want my children with whitelisted computers at an early elementary age. I think that...
Okay, we know about the whitelisting, so thank you.
But I know.
Maureen, who's not? I just got to... Yeah. We got to move on.
Okay.
Thank you.
If I make my succinct, I don't want to get out of there. But a couple items. The succession discussion, I thought it's interesting that Ms. Nelson talked about the transparency of conversation regarding a board president election. I was on the park board, so I'm aware of those things that happen, and I totally agree with it, that they're non-transparent. I'm also fairly confident that non-transparent conversation occurred about the succession policy, because I sit here and I never heard any discussion about that. And I'm also fairly certain that somebody directed Dr. Gordon to look into that with the attorney, I would hope. But maybe that didn't occur. But I'm fairly certain that discussion occurred
about the succession policy from board members internally one-to-one. Fairly confident about that. As far as the flexibility issue that Mr. Bachinski brought up, that's great. You have the flexibility. I'd love to have the flexibility as a voter when somebody goes off the board, have a general election, and make the voter turnout bigger than just set six people and pick our own people, because no offense to Ms. Wilkinson, but I wouldn't have voted for her. I would have voted for the person sitting next to me who's been here for 18 months, so who is up on topics and ready to get on this board. So so when we talk about flexibility, you have to broaden your horizon as to how people like me sit here and think about that. And then as far as the listing discussions, I thought you guys had great discussion tonight. But again, you're doing it backwards. You're doing it top-down instead of bottom-up. The listening tour should come first. And you should engage the public, get their viewpoints, absorb what they're thinking, and then formulate your viewpoints. Because what I heard tonight, I'm fairly certain that I could sit with Joe for 6 hours and not convince him to think any differently than he already has done. So he's already showed his hand. So it seems ridiculous to me that you're going to have listening tours, and I'm not picking on you, Joe, but it seems ridiculous
to me
that you're having a listening tour after the fact. They might as be called telling tours. We're going to tell you what our policy is going to be. The listening has to occur at the beginning, and that's where you guys lose your effectiveness from within the community. You need to listen first and then formulate those opinions based on what the community is telling you, because you hold the power. I didn't run to be on the board, but I expected you to listen to me and my opinions. Doesn't mean you have to agree with everything that I say. In fact, I'm fairly confident most of you don't agree with anything. But you still have to listen to me and take that into account, and you have to do it before you're going to actually publicly tell me what you're thinking. So I think at this point the listening tours are a waste of time. You're already starting to move forward with your policy discussion. So I think it's just, I mean, I think you're wasting your staff's time to go ahead and do it. So that part of it, I just think, again, listen to the people first, formulate your opinions, and then make your decision based on that. So,
Kurt, I just asked if I could comment. That's a really good point at the end, and that's what I tried to say a couple times in here. Before we try to rewrite anything, I still want to collect more data. I think that the entire policy committee said the same thing. I hope to prove you wrong. We really do want to listen. We've heard some great stuff already on this. And I think it's all extremely well intended and very well researched. And we want to have the luxury of that research. So we are looking for that. That's why I don't want to rewrite a policy until we have a listening tour. But I like the idea of having listening tours if we can ahead of time. On a policy committee, we have some steps we have to go through. This was only the first reading. We'll change it. I hope we get to prove it wrong. My intent is to listen and to see where we're at. Keep in mind, listening means there's other viewpoints.
Absolutely.
It isn't just going to be the people in this room.
I've given you my viewpoints and not one thing's been listened to. I get that.
But, yeah. So there's going to be other viewpoints, but I want to hear them all.
Yep.
I want to hear them all. So but good point.
But one of the rationales for this, I think it's important to give community members a structure to work from where the current thinking is, because that's going to be the piece that people are going to be pushing back against, is saying, well, in section two, as Angel was able to do, you know, section three or whatever that is, that I think helps the conversation in a more proactive approach from my opinion, that this piece is here, that community members are able to speak on it and to give direct feedback to policy members who can come back and recraft. I hope. I mean, every board member is open to more conversation.
If you haven't received the policy yet, so you can certainly give them the policy now.
But that's all out there, and that's the plan. Is
right.
During that listening session, that's what we would.
Comes a listening tour beforehand.
And I would actually say that you would want to know someone's opinion before. I mean, it's better to know mine.
Well, let's work on it.
We'll make it better.
You need to know the avenue I'm coming from.
Yeah, see, and I disagree with that.
That's fine. Well, that's okay.
Okay.
That's a good, good public.
We're talking.
This is public participation where we got to clarify. So that was good. Thank you.
And I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
And I know the park board does it.
See, we agree on that. We all agreed on that.
Well, I'm not sure you guys are totally into that. I heard kind of some backhanded on some of that stuff. I like this, but you know, what if this happens? So.
Too much.
All right. Anybody else want to contribute to this wonderful conversation before we all go get a beer?
We can't all go get a beer. There's rules against that, too.
As far as the, just to piggyback off of sending out the policy to people coming to the listening tour, I still have to agree that it's a little backwards because you're now giving them a marked up policy with, like, this is our vision with what we want to do. It would be better to say, this is our current policy. We think maybe that some changes need to be made. What do you think? Because you're already kind of like directing them in one direction. So if you really want to know what people think, I think in all fairness, they should have the original, not what our legal counsel or what our policy committee already has discussed. But just my
okay.
Couple other things, random thoughts. As far as that policy committee meeting, it was mentioned that it was posted online. I know if we really wanted to engage the community, I know several weeks ago there were several parents attending the board meeting expressing concern about the policy. Wouldn't it have been proactive or nice to reach out to them personally and say, look, we are having a policy committee meeting, it's open to the public, maybe you want to attend. As far as engaging the public, I know Jen Rath asked me to ask this. She said at the last board meeting, which I did not attend, so I can't 100% speak for it, but they were asked to write down questions and that answers would be provided, and she said she still hasn't received answers to her questions, so she was wondering when those were going to be answered.
The green sheets?
The green sheets. I said I wasn't here, I don't know what exactly was said, but she said she didn't have
answers
to questions from the last meeting.
Green sheet questions.
Green sheet
questions. Okay.
Another couple other things. The listening tour. I would recommend PR for the listening tour should be equivalent to what we did for online registration. We sent postcards out. We put stickers on the kids coming home from school. I know we can't do that because it's the middle of the summer. But there was definitely a big push for online registration. There were contests at school, whereas I know the listening tours for the spring, there was a couple of e-blasts, and that was it. So I think we definitely have the ability and the creative mindset of how to push things, PR, to the public.
So that's a good one where it's kind of a best practice on something we did that we could apply to other areas.
Yeah. About the technology, I just want to say that I have a child in middle school, and I know what kids do with technology. And I think that since the school district can provide technology to all of our students, and it is a good thing when it's used properly, but kids having their own device and needing to use them during school day, that is really, I would say, a want, not a need. I mean, to have to be able to read their books or listen to music is a great idea, and I don't think that the technology used for those purposes is bad, but the problem is it's impossible for the teachers to monitor 25 kids in middle school class. And I know from my son, from his mouth, from three other kids, they're not listening to music in study hall. They're playing games. I've seen an aide tell me that in art class, they were allowed to listen to their iPods, and kids were FaceTiming with their friends who were homesick from school. So it's a nice theory that, oh, they could listen to music, and oh, they could read their books, but you can't listen to monitor, and the kids can survive without it. They don't need to listen to their music in study hall. They don't need to read their books during lunch. Like John said, they could have a paper book. And I just think... yes, it is their world. I mean, it is a little too much their world, and I think when they're in school with them, no, you don't necessarily need it for those things, because we can provide them technology for what it is appropriate for. If we couldn't, it would be different. And the last thing, sorry, I think I'm throwing over, as far as this whole presidential policy on the president resigning or moving or something awful happening to them, in my mind, when the people are elected for president, vice president, secretary, you know, they're committing to do that for 2 years. And the person that steps into that role at that time is saying, you know, for the next 2 years, I'm willing to do this. And it just seems right that you would carry that out. The role of a vice president, if you look at Barack Obama, Glenn Ellen newcomers, PTAs, I mean, everyone, it's pretty much commonplace that If the presidency role is vacated for whatever reason, the vice president steps in until the next election. I think that's just, that's how things work. And that person that has committed to be vice president, that's what they're agreeing to be vice president for. And they've been involved in the decisions that have happened those past 2 years. And they're wearing that hat thinking, you know, I might have to be president at some point. I need to keep that in mind in my actions, decisions, whatever I'm doing now. So in my mind, it doesn't make any sense. It's a 2 year time frame. Why would you change it? You elected that person to be vice president. You didn't all of a sudden, after a year, you no longer trust them, you no longer want them to be president, like the vision has changed. It just doesn't make any sense to me why you would change it. I think that most school districts, most boards, most anything that I can think of, that's the way a vice president to presidential role works.
Okay. On that note, thank you. Anyone else? No? All right, guys. Oh, I guess I need to do this. Right?
Yeah.
We need a motion or something. Motion to adjourn the meeting.
So moved.
Second.
So Joe motioned and she seconded.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Or the way around.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great evening.
Thanks.
Vote yes. All in favor, say
aye.
Aye.
Any nays?
Aye.